RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. And here comes the submission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome into the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, it is the week after Thanksgiving, and we have got a lot to talk about here on this week's episode of the podcast. Momentarily, Daniel Galvan will join me to recap what happened last Saturday in China, UFC Fight Night 122. Plus, we are going to preview the Ultimate Fighter 26 finale, Bellator 189, and UFC 218. Plus, we're going to get into some other MMA news and notes. Also, I'm going to have interviews with Jakar Close, who's going to fight on Saturday at UFC 218. Also, we'll chat with Andre Sukumthal, who's taking a short notice fight next week at UFC Fight Night 123. Also, we'll talk to Brandon Gertz, who's fighting next week in Italy at Bellator 189. And our final interview is going to be with Shamrock FC matchmaker Rob Doniker. I had a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about Shamrock FC 300, which is coming up on Friday night. But of course, as always, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight's the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners, live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Daniel, it was an interesting Saturday last week for UFC Fight Night 122. Of course, Kelvin Gastelum knocking out Michael Bisping. But I kind of want to start off this week's conversation by talking a little bit of continuation of our talk last week about UFC Fight Pass. Of course, we went kind of in length to that this week, and my yearly subscription came up today here, and I did not renew my yearly subscription. I looked at the month of December calendar, and I said, you know what? Not going to do it right now. I think at some point I'll likely renew my yearly subscription, but I just kind of looked at it and kind of looked at my travel schedule, and I said, you know what? Not going to renew at this point.
Well, needless to say, ladies and gentlemen, we are entering December 2017, and we have discovered that Jason Floyd is sexist. You're telling me they're doing Women's Week on Fight Pass, Jason, and this is the week you no longer subscribe to Fight Pass? This is not a good look, Jason.
See, now, usually I'm the one who tells you some news. I had no idea that it's Women's Week on UFC Fight Pass.
Oh, yeah, right. All I'm saying is this is a bad look by Jason Floyd. He subscribed to UFC Fight Pass since its inception, and the day is when they're kicking off the Super Fight Series. And yeah, no, I totally understand. I mean, honestly, when you look at this month so far that I see in December, to me, like, the only value I would have is just going back and rewatching episodes of The Ultimate Fighter before the finale on Friday. That, to me, is the only value, and that is not a lot of value. In fact, I probably won't do that. So I just don't know what would motivate you to hand down the money.
Interesting you bring that up, because after I canceled UFC Fight Pass, I get this email from the UFC, and it has six compelling reasons to stay active as a UFC Fight Pass customer. I just want to get your thoughts on whether you think these are legit reasons or BS reasons. Number one, live UFC Fight Night events produced exclusively for UFC Fight Pass. That's a real reason.
Say that again? I'm trying to gather my wits, because that just sounded too amazing. That just sounded so damn appetizing. Hey,
compelling reason number one, which is a legit reason, okay. Live UFC Fight Night events produced exclusively for UFC Fight Pass. That's a legit reason of why to have Fight Pass.
With commercials, but go ahead.
Okay, number two, live UFC Fight Night early prelims to every UFC event.
Yeah, I'm ready to throw up. That's the second strongest reason. This reminds me of an MMA Junkie article about, like, a crappy Fight Night card, where it's like 10 reasons to watch, you know, 10 reasons to watch this crap card. This is not good. What's number three?
Okay, number three. New enhanced featured bouts for all UFC events. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know if that's like what they do for pay-per-views where you can, you know, choose your audio function, whether, you know, you want to listen to, you know, a certain corner or whatnot. Maybe that is. So don't really understand that. Point number four, unlimited access to the world's largest combat sports library, including every UFC event in history. For me, that's not really a selling point.
I mean, how often do you go back and rewatch fights? Like, when does this take place?
Rarely. Honestly, rarely.
Exactly. I mean, that is, you're not going to binge watch fights unless you're doing, like, maybe preparation. But at the end of the day, Jason, wait, are there more reasons?
Oh, there's two more. Right? There's two more reasons.
What are they?
And I call BS on both of these reasons. Point number five, growing number of originally produced series, documentaries, and exclusive interviews. Hold on, so you're telling me I need to be paying for a Fight Pass to get exclusive interviews that, let's be honest about it, most of that stuff they put on the YouTube channel anyway.
Yeah, and first off, the interviews where the person interviewing the UFC fighter or promoter is a UFC employee, those are literally the worst interviews because it's such filtered BS.
It's a PR
such
interview.
Crap. You are literally paying for a worse interview. Like, with all due respect, if WME is signing your paycheck, you're not really a journalist because, again, Jason, like, you know, I work for a school as a SID, yeah. And it's like a really small school where I'm doing all the stories. I'm not going to be doing scathing pieces on the student athletes, so that's a bunch of crap. What's number six?
Every season of The Ultimate Fighter and other UFC televised shows.
Look, the way I think about The Ultimate Fighter is like this. I don't know if you drink water bottles, but after you drink the water bottle and you just have to throw away the bottle, you just think, man, this thing is just going to stay on the planet Earth until the end of time. And it's just this big pile of crap. And that's what I think of when I think of The Ultimate Fighter. It's just, oh, that's just wasting space. So, again, one good reason, honestly. Like, at the end of the day, right, the only reason you should be subscribed to Fight Pass is to watch a fight night card.
Correct, yes. A live fight night. I was thinking about this week of how they could improve the product. What if you took, you know, all of the prelims off TV and all the prelims were on Fight Pass?
That would certainly improve the product and would probably raise the rating of the television show, I think, because I think 6-hour blocks or 5-hour blocks of television, people get tired after watching the programming for 2 hours. So maybe a good idea, but dude, you're getting way more money out of all the content you're selling for TV, out of the TV deal. You know, that $200 million they're going to get for that TV deal far outweighs what that impacted out on Fight Pass. So honestly, I don't know if that's the most effective idea.
And Joe Daddy 85 on Twitter, he said this to me. He says, you mentioned problems with Fight Pass. Haven't been on in a while. Just took me an hour to get to work. Terrible. Why do we still pay for this? You know, he goes on to say, I try to watch something and it says to join, even though I'm already logged in. Just no effort in improving the service. You know, and I think that's kind of a big thing that you hear from a lot of fans is there really an effort, you know, to enhance the UFC Fight Pass service? I mean, because, look, it could, you know, there is a lot of potential there. But, you know, at the end of the day, the UFC is trying to get, you know, 400 plus million for a television rights deal, which, you know, that's just not going to happen. You know, and I think it's very telling that Fox is only putting a $200 million bid out there. I still think it's probably $250 million, but I do, you know, if they're going to be invested in Fight Pass, I think they have to give you a reason. I mean, look, this past Saturday, while it was not a great card on paper, did definitely give you a reason to tune into the fights. I of course, I'm an early riser, so I got up and I was doing some work and put on the fights. I think I started watching live. You know, the very last prelim and watch the main card. You know, I saw, you know, the situation with Alex Aceris. I don't know how they don't stop that fight after the first round. I think it was the first round when he was clearly knocked out. You know, first off, aid to the referee of, I mean, the referee is holding him up to get him to the corner.
Yeah.
Like, okay, at that point, you know, it should be stop and fight. But then also, you kind of look at the corner of Alex Caceres. You know your fighter is knocked out, and you're still sending him out there to fight. You know, that was uncomfortable. Maybe that's the best way to describe it, in seeing that scene.
Well, dude, that was awful. But you know what else is awful was the scorecards for that fight. Like,
oh God, how do you score the 2-1 for Alex Caceres? What fight was that guy watching?
I mean, dude, and not only that, this is like a full throttled failure by the institutions of mixed martial arts in this fight between Alex Caceres and Wang Guan in the featherweight division. Obviously a crap decision. Like, Guan won 2 rounds for sure, and maybe 3. But and also that first round was a 10-8, because when you nearly kill someone, that should be a 10-8. The third failure was what, Jason? The commentary. Dan Hardy calling Alex Caceres Alex Garcia roughly like 30 times was just an absolute failure. I don't know what was going on, but Dan Hardy, by God, he called Caceres Garcia so many times, it was absolutely distracting. Hardy's a great commentator, but this was like the ultimate, like, Yoel Romero pooping your pants moment for Dan Hardy. Pretty embarrassing.
I tell you, I had the volume down so low, I really wasn't paying attention to the commentary.
He called him Alex Garcia like 20 times.
And I tell you, I have found myself not really listening to the commentary team, just MMA in general, just because I do think that sometimes the way the fight's called can sway how you view the fight.
Yeah, yeah. I understand what you're saying, because at the end of the day, when you're talking about commentators, they're so damn nervous, trying not to embarrass themselves with the words. Mm-hmm. Their perception of the fight is pretty skewed. They're not able to completely focus, and because of the words they say, that could certainly have a bias on what you're doing. So, you know, I really enjoy the commentary team. I understand what you're saying, but you'll miss out on kerfuffles and failures, because my 2 points on the commentary was this fight in particular, Dan Hardy screwed up pretty bad. He kept on calling him Alex Garcia. He acknowledged it and then would go on to continue to make the mistake. But you know what I love, Jason, is I started watching this card from the prelims on up, and I love how you have these fights with fighters like Wuliji Buren and Hu Yaozong and Wu Yanan. Fighters with like this is how you figure out that China's really good at cybersecurity, because you can't find their fights anywhere. And you could just tell by the lead up, like the pre-packaged videos and the things they say as they're making the entrance to the cage, that Dan Hardy has no idea who the hell these fighters are. They're using every cliche in the book. Like, Hu Yaozong, he's a scrapper. He's been training really hard the last 3 years. Like, Wuliji Buren, like, the one thing about him was he was a Chinese wrestler. Like, that's his style, Chinese wrestling. And you feel bad for the commentators, but we take for granted, like, all the details they're able to fill in. But imagine the poor production people that had to do these things. Some of these fighters were absolutely really bad. But fortunately, we had some great Chinese fighters later on, because the crowd was so hungry and loud. And they deserved some nice moments, and they sure had a whole hell of a lot.
Hell, I remember the main card was like over in it seemed like it was over like in 75 minutes. I mean, because there was no, obviously, having to play commercials when you're on FS1. So, you know, I love that aspect of it. Alex Garcia, I think, I don't know how many people really picked Alex Garcia to win that fight submission. Li Jialing, you know, the TKO win over Zach Otto. The referee gave Zach every opportunity to stay in that fight. And then, of course, the main event, Kelvin Gastelum knocking out Michael Bisping, just a vicious knockout. And, you know, we got a question related to that fight saying, since the New York Commission, wink, wink, shortened Bisping's medical suspension, he could fight just 3 weeks after GSP. What other organization can step in on future issues like this? Clearly not something anybody thought was a good idea. You know, we talked about it last week. You know, I was uncomfortable with Michael Bisping fighting, you know, 3 weeks after, you know, losing the UFC middleweight title in the fashion that he did. And I don't know if you can sit there and say that if Michael Bisping would have had an 8-week camp, if this fight goes that much different. But the fact of how he was just knocked out cold, it was just, I just remember as I was sitting there watching it, I, you know, once again, just felt uncomfortable. But, you know, really, I think this is ultimately where you have to look at the UFC. At the end of the day, the UFC could have, you know, told Michael Bisping, no, you're not going to fight on 3 weeks' notice after what happened at UFC 217. So, you know, I mean, look, the fighter is always going to want to fight. There's got to be people around them that basically say, no, you shouldn't do it. So I think ultimately you have to, you know, in terms of, you know, there's got to be people around the fighter that protect the fighter from being a fighter.
Yeah, you can't blame Michael Bisping for taking this fight, because for all intents and purposes, he's going to retire after his next fight. And so you look at it and you're like, well, I'm going out in a blaze of glory. I'll come in, get knocked out in a round, but that paycheck's sure going to be real big. And if you look at a fighter who looks like he has nothing to lose, how can you talk him out of doing this payday? They're likely, I mean, at the end of the day, there is no secret organization. There is no great organization or idea that I think would save the UFC from saving itself. You're right. The UFC holds responsibility. When they fail in these situations, it's worth criticizing them. I understand they had their hands tied in terms of late replacement, but this was certainly a mistake because it's a dangerous proposition to put a guy in there who was like essentially knocked out in the GSP fight, force him to make another weight cut, which that has to really deplete your body. I don't know how hard the weight cut is for Bisping to 185, but let's not forget about that aspect of recovery. And then against a heavy hitter to only get knocked out, this was a really bad look. This was really scary. Bisping's a legend. He's kind of doing the retirement tour. Kelvin Gastelum looked great, obviously, but this is something that at the end of the day, it's important for everyone who believes this to shout to the high heavens that this fight should not have happened. It really shouldn't have.
You know, I like Kelvin Gastelum calling out the Robert Whittaker matchup. I mean, is he going to get it? No. But then, of course, you think about this. At 185, the champion, former 170er, interim champion, former 170-pound fighter. You look at Kelvin Gastelum, former 170-pound fighter. So, yeah, I think it's kind of that sign of, you know, not cutting massive amount of weight can be a good thing for you. You know, we did get asked about what should be next for Michael Bisping. You know, of course, everyone expects that March will be his retirement fight in London. Him and Jorge Masvidal got into it again. Joe Daddy, who submitted the question, you know, mentioned Masvidal as a potential opponent. Yoel Romero, I think you can't roll that one out, but man, maybe Masvidal is the route to go, because if they put him in there against Yoel Romero, I don't know if that ends much differently. Oh,
dude, no, don't do the Yoel fight, because like a guy's last fight should all be about a close contest. You should at least give him an opportunity to win. And I think a fight against Yoel Romero would be scary bad for Bisping. I think his retirement fight's got to be like a grudge fight or against like a fellow UFC legend, maybe match him up with Chuck Liddell. Not really. I'm joking. But
Vitor?
Something like that. Vitor? That's, yeah. I mean, that could also lead to a brutal knockout, but at this point, might as well. But I think you got to look at the UFC Legends division, or you got to be cold-blooded, Jason, and you got to look at a rising middleweight. Like, imagine you do something like it's like pro wrestling. When you're gonna retire, you gotta put over your talent.
Go for it. Paulo Costa.
100% what I was thinking. You first thought Vitor, then you thought new Vitor.
new Vitor.
yeah, but it's like pro wrestling formula. You have a name value, so long term for the promotion, you want to put that name value in a position to put over new talent. So that could be one way to go about it, unless you want the night to be all about remembering Michael Bisping and how great he was and end it in a positive so you match him up with a weaker opponent. So I don't know, Jason. How would you go about it? Would you go about it, put him in a position to put over a talent, or more of like a Uriah Faber type deal where he's taking on Brad Pickett or whatever? Even though, yeah, something like that.
I'd probably go that route.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, it'd be, you know, but I'm sure Bisping's going to want to fight the toughest dude possible. And most likely, since that will be a fight pass card, I guess by that point, I'll have to have fight pass back.
Yep.
You know, I think he probably got to go that route, but, you know, we'll see what happens there.
Here's what I'll say about that. The rest of the card, two things. The crowd was amazing. Mm-hmm. Again, I just want to reiterate how great the crowd was in terms of volume. I don't know if the Chinese government just forced the entire population to do it. Like, China was really scary to me in terms of the government. Ooh, those people are scary. Granted, I guess they probably say the same thing about us. But the Song brothers getting the knockout, they're not brothers, but Keenan Song and Yudong Song. Keenan Song's knockout over Bobby Nash was awesome. And then Yudong Song's finish over Barak Khandari. Those are just really nice finishes that delighted the crowd, and I loved it. And in terms of future stars, Jason, don't know how successful she'll be long term, but I'm going to mispronounce her name really badly. But Shannon Yan, the woman strawweight who beat Kaylin Curran, her stand up looked great. She could be a star in China. And then featherweight Zabit Magomed Sharipov just obliterated Shaymin Moraes. And out of everybody on this fight card, I think Magomed Sharipov has just an absurd, absurd ceiling. That's the name to look forward to in terms of like the highest of highs in the featherweight division.
Like, there's no way Kaylin Curran gets another UFC fight.
Dude, she's 4-6. She's talented. And that fight was my favorite fight of the night. They didn't award any fight of the nights, but I think Kaylin Curran's going to be back.
1-6 in the UFC now?
Yeah, yeah. Wait, she's 1-6 in the UFC?
That
would be insane if she's 1-6. I know she's 4-6 overall. Yeah, you're totally right. Wow, that is awful. Yeah,
I mean, you look at her, and I think it's you know, and you mentioned about how talented you know she is, and you see it. Is I think that's almost kind of a case of why you shouldn't rush to get to the UFC.
Well, here's a good transition. If you want to move on to something else, but I think she may need to like change her entire camp or something, because it's not unheard of for these fighters to really tread water and do poorly, and then kick it into high gear. Like, you know a female fighter that did that, Jason?
Who's that?
Sam Modafari.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, of course, we're recording this on Tuesday night. You know, the final episode of The Ultimate Fighter has not aired yet, but we'll see if she's in the final. I did see a tweet they were talking about the potential of, you know, you could have a potential final to, you know, the crowning of the inaugural flyweight champion of two fighters, if Roxanne's not involved, of that lost their last official fights, and which you know, it's been interesting to me because they're just, and we'll kind of transition this into Friday to the Ultimate Fighter 26 finale. Just, man, there is it, to me, for the past you know 2-3 months as this show has started, I have felt that no one cares.
Yeah, I believe the ratings of this show have been just disastrous.
Awful. I mean, look, for FS1, they're fine, but you just, you know, there's got to come a point where you just say, make the Ultimate Fighter Fight Pass a Fight Pass only product. I mean, because, you know, they're trying to do whatever they can to get people interested, and if people are not interested in an inaugural title fight, are people really going to be interested in a season full of undefeated fighters? I doubt it.
Yeah, the show is dead, but it's been dead forever. And I don't know how you could fix it. Like, will there ever be a time in the future where we are saying, man, this Ultimate Fighter, they really figured things out? I think it comes, the co-main event podcast, I was listening to them, and they talked about the predictability of the show, and it's so true. It's ingrained in our DNA, Jason. You yourself and myself could each direct an entire season of The Ultimate Fighter and probably do a half-decent job because we know all the beats and we know how to do it. It's been shot the same way and done the same way time and again, and there hasn't really been any way of advancement. And the solution is probably just killing the show. But
I think the best way, like, look, I used to be a huge fan of Bar Rescue. But yeah. what ultimately turned me off the show was, I mean, look, it was the same show every week, just different cast of characters.
Yeah.
There was no difference to it. And I think that's a way to kind of sum up The Ultimate Fighter. It's the same show every season. It's just a different cast.
Yeah. And
who's
going to
get drunk
cast
in the house? Who's going to say something inappropriate? I mean, like, that's
totally.
I guess you can pretty much say that about every reality TV show.
Yeah, it's true. You can say that about every show. But then the cast also sucked this year in terms of talent level. Like Roxanne Modafferi has really turned her career around. But by gosh, you shouldn't be the number one seed in your flyweight championship tournament. I mean, she may in fact prove herself as like a dominant champion, because obviously she's completely upgraded her stand up, and it's insane.
Here's the question mark. So whoever walks out Friday night as the first ever women's flyweight UFC champion,
yeah,
are they the champion after the first title defense?
Who do you think they'll defend the title against? Because I actually think Mata Ferry is actually really talented now.
Goodelia's mentioned about going up to 125.
That'd be tough.
Valentina's mentioned about going down to 125.
That would be tough as well. I would say no to both of those.
Joanna's talked about going to 125.
Look, if the champion fights Paige VanZant, they will defend the title.
Let's say Roxanne ends up being the champion. Okay. Uh-huh. And I think that's what kind of everyone, you know, points to. Let's just say she's a champion.
Yeah.
Could she make a successful title defense, say, against Jessica Eye?
I think so. I mean,
125 is Jessica Eye's natural weight class. She just was not big enough at 135. 125 is her weight class. And I mean, I think she's one of the ones that, you know, and obviously she didn't want to go into the reality show. But, I mean, to me, it may be you've got, what, maybe a 90% chance that if Roxanne Modafari is the champion in a week from now, that her first title defense, she'll be the underdog?
Yeah, I think it's pretty likely that'll take place. I mean, a fight against Jessica Eye from Modafari, like if Eye beats, wins her next fight, and she snaps like her 4 or 5 fight losing streak, I think she'll probably be the dog against Modafari, because, again, I think if Roxanne wins, if she advances to the final and wins again, it'll likely be a finish. She impressed me in her fight against Jennifer Maya in 2016, split decision, but then she just looked great against Sarah Aleo finishing her. So I think we'll Modafferi, well-rounded, but yeah, probably won't be champion for long, but at least will be someone who I would expect to be in the UFC for the next 3 years probably. I don't know how many people on the season will actually be there. I mean, to me, the fighter that stood out in terms of like a star potential personality wise or whatever, it would probably be Montana Stewart. Mm-hmm. I think Barb Honchak obviously has a place in the UFC, and don't discount the run that Nico Montano has gone on as she first upset Lauren Murphy, the 3 seed, took out Stewart, then Honchak. I mean, she's had an incredibly difficult road. So Montano is also fairly well-rounded, skilled, and someone that I would probably anticipate will still be a part of the picture at 125, because this is a division that certainly needs people like her and needs a lot of depth. So I would imagine you'll have probably 4 or 5 fighters in the season hang around the long run.
You know, and of course, the finale on Friday night will be one of two MMA cards. Of course, Bellator's got a card on Friday night as well, as it'll be in Oklahoma. For Bellator 189, and of course, as of the recording of this podcast, the complete fight card for the Ultimate Fighter 26 finale is not out. Right now we only have 4 confirmed fights. I will tell you that coming on Thursday on the MMAReport.com, we'll have an interview with a fighter that was on the Ultimate Fighter 26, but I told the person that I set the interview up with that I would not release the interview till Thursday once her fight is officially announced. But in terms of the two fights that have me interested on the UFC card on Friday would be, one, the Tarion Ware versus Sean O'Malley. Let's see the hype train of Sean O'Malley. I have a feeling Tarion Ware is going to knock down that hype train a little bit here on Sean O'Malley. And the other one is Eric Spicely against Gerald Mershart. I Eric Spicely is a guy that everyone knows has tremendous jiu-jitsu. Gerald Mershart also has tremendous jiu-jitsu, and to me, he's got the clear advantage on the feet in this matchup. So those are really the two fights on the UFC fight card that have me interested. Over on the Bellator fight card, which I don't think anyone's talking about this fight card at all, we've got the Bellator debut of Sam Cecilia on the preliminary card. He takes on Marcus Galvo. Then on the main card, a couple matchups that definitely have my interest. I'm really interested in that co-main event, Rafael Lovato versus Chris Honeycutt, Hisaki Kotto, Chidi Njikwani. That should be a great stand-up fight there. You got David Rickles against Adam Piccolotti, and then you got the main event, a rematch, Julia Budd defending the women's featherweight title against Arlene Blinko. It'll be interesting on Friday night to see kind of how MMA Twitter is, what fights are they following. And I guess it's probably going to be one of those situations. I think fans are going to just be going back and forth and just picking what fights they want to watch between the two cards.
Yeah, yeah. And this could be something where here is my suggestion to the mixed martial arts fan. Pretty simple. By the way, my favorite fight this weekend is Brett Johns and Joe Soto.
Okay, I like that.
My number. I just think Johns is awesome. And obviously Joe Soto, pay-per-view main eventer, Jason. Number two would probably be Cecilia Marcus Galvao, even though it's on the prelims. Like, what the hell? You mentioned it. Cecilia making the debut. And then number three, I think it's going to be insane. Hisaki and Chidi Anjokwani will likely be crazy. But here is my advice. If you are a mixed martial arts fan, it's Friday night. You should not watch fighting. Do not watch mixed martial arts. Just forsake it. Go outside. Go out in the world. By God, order yourself some buffalo wings. Watch some professional wrestling. Go on a date with a girl or a guy. Attend a zoo. Hang out. And on Saturday, dedicate that day to two things. If you're a sports fan, fighting and football in the league, because UFC 218 is a beautiful, beautiful card. What I think you should do if you're a fight fan is obviously on one screen have on all the college football games, but on the other, just read up about what took place last night and pick and choose five or six fights that you think best represent the most entertaining and notable fights and watch them as like a pre-up before UFC 218. That is my suggestion.
Man, I love UFC 218. I'll be up in Appleton, Wisconsin, which I'll tell you, so this is my second trip up to do a game up in Green Bay. Last time I went there, Daniel, April 19th, 2011. You remember what happened that night?
Was that Aaron Rodgers? He played No.
MMA related.
Okay, April. Showtime kick.
No, think of greatest moments in Bellator history.
I guess when Bjorn Rebney was shown out. Chandler and Alvarez.
Yeah, their first fight, and that was also the same night as Shogun Hendo.
Yeah, Shogun Hendo.
So maybe that's a little good luck charm that we're gonna have some great fights on Saturday night. Yeah, I'll be up in Green Bay. The last time we played there, Daniel, was back in 2011. As I said, it was the first day of hunting season, and like literally half the stands was in camo.
Jesus, and what were on all the trucks?
Oh, I saw a dead deer on top of a truck.
That is phenomenal. That is phenomenal.
I'll tell you, since I've been working game day broadcasts, Lambeau was – that was a bucket list item for me.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, what's the arena like?
It's unique. They do get loud, but a lot of times it's very quiet. It's a very knowledgeable fan. It's very unlike any NFL stadium out there. You know, it's just, you know, to me it's just it was always you know, unique, and hopefully it's not snowing on Sunday, because I am from Florida. I don't do snow. I think it's actually supposed to be like only in the 40s, so I'm loving that.
Yeah, that actually sounds awful.
I will say this, not much to do in Appleton, Wisconsin, so I will probably at some point make it after dinner. I'll be in the room, hop up UFC.tv, and I'll be ordering the UFC 218 pay-per-view.
I love it, man. What I would love is I would love the sport to get so popular that it runs a stadium show, like in Lambeau Field, while it snows. I want a snowing mixed martial arts card. I would love that. But yeah, man, I why aren't you going to go to Hooters and watch the fights or Buffalo Wild Wings?
There is not one.
Really? They don't have like Hooters
two
there?
There's like two bars.
The Hooters isn't just like women dressed in sweaters because it's so cold?
No. It's, you know, I mean, look, I'll hop on the UFC bar app, just maybe see if there's someone is showing it. But if not, I'll watch. You know, this is one of those fight cards that, you know, I'm going to make sure, you know, to watch this. If I don't have the chance to watch it live, maybe I'm just dead tired. You know, this will be, I will watch it on the flight back home to Tampa on Sunday night. But, you know, when you look at this fight card, there's so many great fights on this fight card. And I was thinking, what's the biggest under the radar fight? And you might ask 10 people and you might get five different answers. Charles Oliveira, Paul Felder, I think it's got to be in that category. David Tamor, Jakar Close, who people are going to hear from Jakar Close here later on in the show. That's got to be an under-the-radar fight. Cejudo Pettis. I feel like no one's talking about this fight, and it's a huge fight at 125 pounds.
Yeah, yeah. I think, look, Cejudo Pettis, the winner's probably going to get a title shot if Dillashaw doesn't get his. And we're talking about that like it's under the radar, but it is. Like, when I think about what people are talking about, they're only talking about three fights. And honestly, you know which fight they're talking about the third most? It's the main event. I feel like the storyline for this week is all about Overeem Francis Ngannou and Alvarez Gaethje. And the third story is, oh, by the way, you get your title fight main event. Am I wrong in thinking that?
Oh, no, you are definitely not wrong with that. I mean, look, you know, I mean, we've seen Jose Aldo headline how many UFC pay-per-views. You know, he just, you know, he hasn't become, you know, a fighter that people go out of their way to watch. I mean, you know, look, I do bar marketing, and for the bar that, you know, one of my clients, you know, we will have UFC 218. And it's very interesting to me because we were talking about it last week about this card, about, you know, what type of audience could we have on Saturday night. And I said, look, for the hardcore fight fan, this is a unbelievable fight card. This is a fight card that the hardcore fight fan is going to go out of their way to watch. But in terms of the mainstream sports fan, it's not UFC 217 because, you know, 217 had GSP. I mean, this is one of those fight cards that if you're going to invite some friends over and you're trying to turn them into MMA fans, this is the type of fight card you bring them over for. Because, like, Gaethje Alvarez, like, I do kind of wonder, should we temper our enthusiasm for this fight just in case it doesn't deliver? Which, there's no way this doesn't deliver, right?
Yeah, Justin Gaethje is legitimately insane. Like, that is just a straight madman, and he is a genius to go with. He has, like, genius to pair off with his insanity, like just a nice cheese curd to pair off with an IPA. I think that fight will be tremendous. I say get excited, Jason. The way I would frame this main card, and by the way, my under-the-radar fight, if it counts, would be Tisha Torres and Michelle Watterson.
Yeah.
Because the way I would frame this main card, including that fight, obviously you take away the championship fight, I think the four main card fights, other ones, each feature at the very least one fighter who is one single victory away from a title shot. That tells you how important it is. Like, it's possible that Tisha could beat Watterson and then put herself in a position to force a trilogy fight with Rose Namajunas. And on the other side, by goodness gracious, you know what the UFC would love to do? Put a rocket pack on Michelle Watterson. Like, they would – obviously, you won't do the Watterson-Rose fight because, I mean, she looked like a Terminator robot that's half melted at the end of that fight. But the UFC would love to put a rocket pack on Michelle Watterson. So you just have like four fights filled with fighters who the UFC wants to market around, or they're itching for a title shot. These fights are important. And honestly, man, which main card fight aren't you looking forward to? They all kind of, I think, will be entertaining too.
I'm looking forward to all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, you UFC shill, but you're right.
Look, I did see someone mention something about, you know, what to do with Tisha Torres if she gets a win. So do you just put the relationship fights together? Amanda Nunes versus Raquel Pennington, and then Tisha Torres versus Nina Ansaroff?
No, I didn't know. That should be a tag team fight.
Come on, you think WWE would not do that?
Yeah. You should put them in the house together, and just a four-person Ultimate Fighter.
Don't give them that idea, because they won't do it.
Yeah, that. I mean, first off, I mean, how big of a favorite would Torres be over Nina Ansaroff? I mean, I know Nina is like
huge.
Yeah, like what were they saying? Like, they were talking about how Nina was like the best fighter in that camp, I think, for a period of time. But yeah, I don't think so. Amanda Nunes and Raquel Pennington may actually happen. Yeah. I don't think Tisha Torres should fight Nina Ansaroff.
They wanted to do that fight, but Raquel got in that accident.
Yeah.
That what was it? She broke her leg. That's what I call.
Yeah. Well,
I'm pretty sure she broke her leg in the accident she had.
Yeah, that'll probably set you back for 10 months. I would assume.
Oh, you would have to imagine. Yeah. I don't know. You know, Amanda Nunes came out, you know, this week and basically, you know, saying, you know, the UFC doesn't like her because she's not good looking and she's not blonde. You know, and there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. There's real bias when it comes to women in mixed martial arts and promoters. Like, they are going to promote women who are quote unquote attractive to people. And is that BS? Yeah.
That's why I think it's going to be interesting to see how they promote Rose Namajunas.
Yeah. I think they need a promoter like Mad Max Fury Road Furiosa, or a promoter like the world's nicest person, because I think she can fit both labels.
Yeah,
like, she's a total badass, but she's also someone you would trust with your puppies.
Yeah, let's just kind of quickly just go through our picks here on the main card. Main event, I'm going Max Holloway. Co-main, I'm going to go Francis Ngannou. Then I'm going to go Henry Cejudo, Justin Gaethje, and I'm going to go Tisha Torres.
Man, pretty good picks there, Jason. I agree with you. I think Tisha Torres just, honestly, if she finishes Michelle Waterson, this could be like the turnaround. Like, Tisha finally got a finish in her last fight. Maybe she'll continue that. Real tough back-to-back opponents for Waterson and Rose and Torres, but I like Torres. I like Justin Gaethje, but there's a part of me in the back of my head that knows Eddie Alvarez is a tested veteran, and he's going to be able to clear through the fire and land a couple of key shots that put away Justin Gaethje. But I still like Gaethje in that pick. Sergio Pettis Cejudo is a phenomenal fight that I think Henry Cejudo will win. I just think him, Francis Ngannou, and Max Holloway are really some next-level talents, and they'll beat their opponents. But yeah, this would be, I mean, the weirdest thing would probably be Aldo winning the championship back, I think, for the UFC.
Yeah.
What's the single result on the main card you think they don't want?
It's got to be Aldo.
Aldo
it's gotta
winning.
Be. It's got to be.
I got number two. That would be Alvarez beating Gaethje.
No. My number two would be Overeem.
Yeah. I think that might be number one, actually.
Because you know they want Ngannou to win. You know they do.
Yeah, we kind of screw that up. I think Overeem is obviously number one, man. Because I think the heavyweight fight to, like, set the heavyweight division back to life would be Francis Ngannou's Stipe Miocic.
I saw that they're actually, Stipe's got a special on FS1 this week. I want to say on Thursday.
Is it going to be 400 or 600 people that will watch that, do you think?
We talked about it last week. I don't know how they can, what more they can do to make Stipe a draw. The guy goes out there, knocks guys out. He's a firefighter by day, MMA fighter by night. I don't know how you make that guy a bigger star.
It's pretty simple. If Francis Ngannou wins in the first round, or if he just wins and he's healthy, he fights Stipe next, ASAP. Like,
they need a main event for UFC 220.
Like, that's the fight to make. Do it.
And please don't put Volkan Ozdemir in the main event of UFC 220. Dana White, you know, look, I understand that, you know, they're very thin at light heavyweight now. I mean, Gustafsson had shoulder surgery. And Dana on Tuesday, you know, saying, you know, Ozdemir is still next, but it's like, how much you wait till this, you know, his legal issues are done before you start claiming what's next for him?
Yeah.
Because you got to think, if that incident happened in August, you got to think the police, and we talked about last week, the police have to believe they have a good case against him.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Daniel Cormier, it's pretty weird because, like, basically what we know is it was like a barroom fight. Guy was knocked out for a long time, pretty messed up, laceration on the head. And then I saw Cormier saying that Volkan defended himself. But, I mean.
How does he know that, though?
Yeah, I know. And you again, you make a great point about the fact that this is from August and is. And for that period of time to pass before we're talking about it like this, there is something to the fire.
You have to think that the police think they have a good case against him. And as we mentioned last week, let's just say he's found guilty or he pleads out to something. With him, you know, not being a United States citizen, could that affect his visa situation?
Yeah. It's weird to be so confident about this, and it's honestly a bad look. When you have a guy who's being charged with, like, assaulting someone, and he's a UFC fighter, like, that's the other thing. Like, if you're a UFC fighter, you do have a responsibility to not use your weapons, which are hands. So, I don't know. It's just a really weird look out of Dana.
But it also makes you, you know, it makes you wonder how many times, you know, a UFC fighter you know, if they're going to go out on, you know, Friday or Saturday night, how often do you think that there is some guy in the bar that basically tries to start something with them?
Guarantee you it happens every night. It has to.
Yeah.
If they're identified as a fighter, which, to be frank, they probably won't be based on the amount of stars in the promotion. Like, there's about four guys that will get identified. But still, yeah, alcohol just leads to poor decisions. And I cannot think of a worse decision than going up to Volkan Ozdemir and challenging him to a fight. Because, one, you know he's not going to – like it'd be one thing. I could get it if you saw John Fitch and you wanted to fight him. Because worst case scenario, he lays on you. But Volkan Ozdemir, he'll just knock you out. So, yeah, you got to understand that at the end of the day, it sucks to, like, drunk people mess with fighters. But you're representing the sport. And once again, the fact that they're so confident this close to the deal is just an awful, awful look.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, and well, you know, look, let's see how it plays out. I mean, I know that it seems like more times than not in today's society, it's you got to prove your innocence as opposed to you're innocent until proven guilty. So, we will see what happens on that. You know, one of the things we always kind of talk about is, you know, I guess we're probably one of the few MMA people that talk about this sport that, you know, go, this is not a mainstream sport. And Michael David Smith, who is a NFL reporter also, but also is a fan of MMA, he had a tweet last week about the Tae-Hun Bong situation. Of course, if you've not heard, he's getting 10 months in jail for his involvement in a fight-fixing scheme where Michael David Smith basically said, hey, there's no mainstream coverage of this, and that basically kind of tells you a lot about why the UFC and MMA is not mainstream.
Yeah, yeah. This is a story that is really interesting because I literally remember the day this fight happened. You remember this stuff?
Oh, yeah, like, I remember. Wasn't it like the night before the fight or two nights before the fight when all of a sudden the line just skyrocketed out of nowhere?
And it wasn't like a normal skyrocket. This was like unheard of odds swinging. Like unheard of. This makes no sense. It's totally obvious. It was totally obvious at the time. I guess just the reason why people aren't talking about this story is you answered it. Like, UFC isn't a mainstream sport. Tae-Hun Bong ended up winning the fight, which is the craziest thing. And Bong is just not a very what's the word? He's not a star. Like, no one cares about Tae-Hun Bong. But if someone who wasn't a star in any other sport in the big leagues took a bribe, that would be such a huge story. I mean, just think about how big a deal Tim Donaghy was.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
It must
have been 10 years by now.
Oh, totally.
The other day when I saw it was the 10-year anniversary of Sean Taylor dying, I could not believe it's been 10 years.
Well, it actually has been 10 years exactly. 2007. Yeah, Sean Taylor died in 2007, right?
Yeah, I was like, man, it's been 10 years already. Wow.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. When you mentioned what you were doing in 2010 or 2011 with the Chandler Hua fight, the fact that was like 6 years ago is horrifying. That is the most horrifying thing I've ever heard.
It doesn't seem like that long ago.
Yeah, yeah, we're just counting our oof. That's why you gotta choose your fights wisely in terms of what you consume, viewers. You can't be spending your whole life watching crappy Fight Pass cards.
But think about this. Think about how, let's just say in the last 6 years, how the mindset of the MMA fan has changed. When you go back to 2011, you were making sure you were watching every MMA event, every UFC event there was. Where now, it's clear people are picking and choosing what cards they're going to watch.
Look, you learn this crap from professional wrestling. It's real simple. Pro wrestling, or literally anything, but pro wrestling in particular, this is the lesson you learn. And this is the lesson that the WWE screwed up with. The WWE had a system where they had a 2-hour show on Monday and a 2-hour show on Friday or Tuesday or Thursday. And that was smart. You could watch those two, and then every month you could buy a pay-per-view. But where they screwed up was they gave the people too much product. They gave them a 3-hour show on Monday – They have a two-hour show on Tuesday, an hour after that, and then on Wednesday there's an hour-long show, and there's just too much product. And so what that does is, at first you are addicted and you watch every single thing, you consume everything, but when you get that oversaturation, Jason, it breaks the addiction, and you begin to realize that you don't have to watch this particular thing. And once you break that addiction, once you break that habit, it only widens the gap. It's as simple as that. Once you teach your viewer or your consumer that this particular event isn't important, but you can tune in later, that is scary territory. That is why no one watches The Ultimate Fighter, because long ago the consumer realized that it wasn't necessary to add to the UFC diet.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting. But you know, Michael Davis Smith is exactly correct. For the people who think MMA is as mainstream as they think it is, this is an example of how it's not. But also, I do wonder, what if this would have been a United States fighter and it happened in the United States?
I think
is it a different story? Is it covered more by, you know, the ESPNs of the world and Deadspins and the big leads and, you know, Clay Travis and things along those lines?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's an outside the lines piece. If it's like a similarly skilled fighter and he also won the fight as well, like he took the bribe, won the fight. Because at the end of the day, for outside the lines, it's pretty hard to send a reporter to South Korea and get this story done. But if it's in America, you can do it. I don't think the immediate – I mean, it would really have to depend on the fighter. But I would say that the attention would be higher, but it also wouldn't probably be as much as you would have expected if I told you an athlete accepted a bribe in an athletic competition in a major sport.
Yeah, I'm not trying to go anywhere near North Korea.
Yeah. I look at Twitter now and North Korea is trending. And you know what I hate is you go to Facebook and you know those people that are your Facebook friends that they scare the hell out of you, but then you realize they're just stupid. Like, they're like, oh, it looks like South Korea is firing missiles. And my immediate thought is, by God, World War III has started, and it's this person on Facebook that's informed me. But they just, like, they just did not consume news properly, and they just processed it incorrectly. Like, it was like a fake news article or something.
That's the problem with Facebook. When you see these articles, it's like you don't know whether it's, you know, it's some, like, clickbait type article just to get clicks. You know, that's why I always like, I look at like what's it linking to? What's the web address before? And most of the time you can by that, you know, whether it's a real story or not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, if it's linked to the MMA report, you know, it's BS, you know, it's
we're the king of fake news.
Yeah. Maybe we should start doing fake news. Do some crazy fake news. Like UFC makes ethical decision. UFC cares about fighters first. Reebok uniforms look good. Like, we do something crazy like that. But, at the end of the day, Jason, when the world ends, the first place we'll hear about it is when we log on to our Twitter and Uncle Bob is posting about it.
Yeah, it's, my Facebook timeline. Sometimes I look at stuff and I'm like, are you kidding me?
My favorite thing about Facebook is you complaining about Jimbo Fisher.
Oh, God. Oh. The funniest with him as Texas A&M head coach.
Yeah, the funniest thing is that your coach is going to go coach Texas A&M, which is where I went to college for 6 weeks. So, although I went to college as long as Sage Northcutt did there. So,
hey, look,
what up?
As I've said about Jimbo Fisher, how good of a coach is he without Jameis Winston?
Hey, man, he's really good with Christian Ponder.
Well, I mean, look, you can say that about a lot of college football head coaches. You know, they get that one special player who walks through their locker room. I think you can say that about, you know, the rise of Urban Meyer at Florida with Tim Tebow. You know, I mean, look, he's still a great coach. He's proven that at Ohio State. But, you know, Tim Tebow, you know, really, I mean, Tim Tebow made Urban Meyer a lot of money.
But
the thing I just, like, you know, I hate with college athletics is how these head coaches, and you really only see it in football, is they basically their agents use other jobs to get more money out of universities.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, and the crazy thing is how many rights or how flexible coaches are, and you look at like the athletes who aren't getting paid and like how screwed they are the system.
It ultimately goes by the thing of, you know, and look, as we're recording the show, news hasn't come out whether Jimbo's leaving. I expect him to leave. I don't think he's going to be at Florida State next year. You know, Chris Peterson, come on, baby. Come on from Washington.
Oh, yeah,
come
dude.
On.
I doubt it, man. He's staying in Washington. He's got his ass parked in Washington.
I've heard some things that he would be open to leaving.
That would be weird to see him recruiting in Florida. But
if Florida State comes open, I think they'll have their choice of who they want as their next head coach. The crappy thing about it is, as a student athlete, you're stuck at that university for 4 years. But if that head coach that you signed with leaves, there's no penalty for him leaving. But if you want to leave, there's a penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about like the crazy thing about college is like when you transfer for the most part, unless you're a senior, you can't play for the next year, which is like, imagine if that happened in college, if you transferred and you couldn't do your occupation for a year,
you talk about crazy NCAA rules. How about the Houston basketball player that had to sit out a game at the first game of the year because he played in a church rec league game in the summer?
I didn't see that.
Google it. He played in a church rec league game. So that was a violation of NCAA rules, which I don't even know how that could be a violation of NCAA rules. A church rec league game? Seriously?
That is the craziest, stupidest thing. The NCAA is the one thing about this, right? We always talk about how insane mixed martial arts is, which it is, or maybe how bad the relationship may be between the power players in the sport and the media, or whatever. But I think every person in all these sports worlds probably thinks their own situation is the worst, because each sport has an insane governing body and insane higher ups and a really, really self-absorbed media. Like those are the three pillars of every sport. And the NCAA is pretty bad.
I mean, I love college football. I mean, I absolutely love it. I mean, Saturday I'll be trying to take in all these games I possibly can. I mean, it's who knows. I have a feeling something crazy is going to happen on Saturday in terms of all these college games.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen?
I think Wisconsin's going to lose Ohio State. You know, so that's going to kind of open up a spot there. Auburn's now number two in the college football playoff rankings, which I think is deserved. I mean, yeah, they have two losses, but they're one of the best four teams in the country right now. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I think you win the SEC championship, you're in. As simple as that. SEC is just really, really strong, and they really benefit from the Pac-12 being awful. So, I mean, it's like you win, you're in if you're Oklahoma, if you're Wisconsin, if you're the SEC, and Clemson, obviously, they win, they're in. But, I mean, this is the year that really makes me wish there were eight teams, and it's as simple as five automatic qualifiers, you win your conference, and I wish there was an automatic qualifier for the best team in the group of five. And then you have two wild cards.
What I've always said, 16-team playoff.
16-team. Okay. Let's go. Okay.
The 11 conference winners all get in.
Oh, Jesus.
And there's five at-large bids. So then it automatically, everyone has a chance to win the national championship.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest about it. UCF doesn't have a chance to win the national championship.
Yeah, and they're undefeated.
But in my formula, they'd have a chance.
Dude, I hate that formula. You're telling me the winner of, like, I don't know, the Sun Belt is guaranteed.
Do you realize how much more money the NCAA could make off that and all these universities could make?
Dude, who's the best team in the Sun Belt? Like Arkansas State? Arkansas State, or we'd be seeing
Come
Arkansas
State. Could you
State
imagine if Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic?
Oh, my gosh,
He is playing for the Sun Belt. I think it's the Sun Belt. It's Conference. Is it Conference USA, maybe?
It's Conference USA.
There's talk Lane Kiffin could be back at Tennessee.
I doubt it. That would be
I
crazy.
Doubt it, but that would be crazy. I'll tell you this. Whoever's next Tennessee coach, they're going to make a lot of goddamn money.
Yeah. Then they better not have a past. I'll tell you that
Well, that's the big thing about if Lane Kiffin goes back, Briles, the son, is his offensive coordinator for Atlantic. And, of course, obviously he was involved with the whole Baylor situation.
Yeah, well, the thing about Tennessee is, like, this whole narrative that, I wouldn't hire Greg Schiano. But this, I tell you what, I call BS on the whole narrative. Like, Tennessee fans are, like, these amazing people. Dude, they didn't want Greg Schiano because he's not that good at coaching football.
This is the thing about college athletics.
Yeah.
Every university is run by major boosters. And when I talk about major boosters, I'm talking about, you know, people that put millions of dollars into a university. They're ultimately the ones that make those decisions. And, you know, in this situation, Greg Schiano, I mean, look, I don't think that it was, you know, the best hire for them. But I think maybe that ultimately tells you where Tennessee's football program's at.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like the pill to swallow if you're hiring Schiano. And so now it's so much pressure on the next hire. I mean, this athletic director is going to get fired. Like,
it wouldn't shock me if it's T. Martin. Comes back to his alma mater. He's at USC right now. Wouldn't surprise me if that's the guy. Mike Gundy's out there. But let's get back to MMA. Two other things we do want to bring up. Are you like me and just praying we see Ben Askren in the UFC?
Yeah. I really want to see him in the UFC because I hate the same reason why I was saying I want the best of the group of five is I want answers to these questions. And simply put, Ben Askren very well could be the best welterweight of all time. Like, probably not. Like, in all likelihood, definitely not. But the dude is undefeated. The dude is really good at wrestling. And if he retires 18-0 in one no contest coming off a first-round finish over Shinya Aoki in Singapore, if that's the last of Ben Askren, that would be a shame. I think the UFC should sign him, Jason.
I know. From a sporting aspect, I hope it happens. And then, of course, another note to mention here, Khabib. Edson Barboza is official as a co-main event of UFC 219. Of course, that was a whole debate last week about, the UFC wanted to do an interim title fight. And my stance on it is this. If you're Tony Ferguson, why risk it? You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Conor McGregor. We'll see what happens. But if you're Tony Ferguson, you have to sit and wait and see if that Conor McGregor fight's going to take place. That is life. That is a life-changing fight for Tony Ferguson. Sorry, Khabib, you're not a life-changing fight.
Yeah. You're not a life-changing fight. Ferguson's coming off a fight, like, not too long ago. Khabib hasn't fought in, like, 13 months. And Khabib's really good at fighting. So all those things together wouldn't do it. Tony Ferguson, it's imperative to wait. Like, I saw Daniel Cormier was, like, calling out Tony. I thought that was a bad look by DC.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's Khabib's teammate. I mean, you really shouldn't be sure about that.
I know, but I'd still say bad look, bro. You know,
it'd be one of those things if the roles were reversed. Is DC making that comment? Probably
not. No way.
That'd be like, hey, DC, John Jones is eligible to fight, but we want you to fight Volkan Ozdemir.
Yeah.
No, you're waiting for John Jones.
Daniel Cormier would run through the high hills. He would not fight Volkan. So I tell you what, Jason, I guess just to wrap up the UFC 218, what are your, like, full picks for the card? So, because I think people like getting your full picks.
All right, so I've already given my main card picks, which were Holloway, Ngannou, Cejudo, Gaethje, and Torres. Oliver Felder, ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a great fight.
Oh, I'd probably go Oliveira.
I understand. It's got a lot of upside. I don't understand. And I also have Oliveira in that fight against Paul Felder. You know, Paul Felder, man, dude just commentated a fight card like 2 weeks ago. I feel like Charles Oliveira and Alex Oliveira fight on the same fight card every time. Could be wrong there, but I think both the brothers win, even though they're not brothers. But
yeah, I like Oliveira in that fight.
Yeah, over Yancy Medeiros.
Yeah, I like Jakar Close against David Teamer. I think the wrestling of Jakar Close will be the difference in that matchup. Of course, you'll hear from Jakar here. Momentarily, Herrig, Courtney Casey. I'm leaning Felice Herrig on that one.
Yep, I actually agree with both those picks. I think Felice Herrig, like, you talk about evolution of a female fighter, she's one of those that I would put in that camp. She appears to have turned things around. I love the high volume offense. I think she beats Casey. Great fight for her to win. And Close is also my pick.
And then on the fight pass prelims, Razik Al-Hassan, I like him over Sabah Hamasi. Dominic Reyes over Jeremy Kimball. Justin Willis over Alan Crowder. And Amanda Cooper over Angela Magana.
I can't believe Angela Magana is still in the UFC. I think she'll lose to Amanda Cooper. I like Alan Crowder to beat Willis, Justin Willis, and Reyes and Al-Hassan to win as well.
Crowder could catch Willis, but I have a feeling Willis will use his wrestling, and that could be a three-round decision.
Oh, you know what you say? What I say about heavyweight fights, Jason, either ends in the first round or it's a damn slopper knocker. I think Willis and that fight could be pretty good. I do like me Justin Willis, though. Big, pretty. He's just a big guy with a gut, and he's not afraid to throw down. I love me some heavyweight fights. I really do.
Well, you got a bunch of heavyweight fights coming in 2018 with Bellator, which...
No, I don't. I have guys that... When Rory McDonald is like the number one alternate, no, that ain't a heavyweight Grand Prix.
Don't put him in. No. We should not be having 170ers in a heavyweight tournament.
Dude, that is crazy.
Like, are we going, hey, Michael Chandler, you want in the heavyweight tournament? Are we? Where do you draw the line?
Dude, Roy Nelson would outweigh Rory McDonald by 100 pounds come fight time. Like, literally a solid century.
I caught a lot of, it seemed to catch a lot of flack by people, by me saying Mitrione's is my favorite to win it.
Well, what did people say? Like, Ryan Bader should be the favorite?
I seem to think that everyone thinks he's not making it out of the first round of that tournament. Here's a crazy thing. Okay, we know there's going to be alternates used in this tournament. Good chance. Would it be crazy if the final is like Rory McDonald, Gegard Mousasi?
Yeah, they might as well make that fight. And that fight should be at 185.
I don't understand why they're doing Bader Mo in the first round.
I think it's like they're doing big fights first. And they're concerned about everything later because they know there's going to be alternates. They know that Shane Carwin's going to win this tournament.
Looks like Shane's coming out of retirement. He's going to sign with Bellator.
Yeah. I think Shane Carwin's going to win this tournament, man. I see it now. I mean, Carwin is a crazy cat because before the retirement, this guy looked like a train.
Top of my head, didn't Shane retire in 2011?
Yeah, he lost to JDS, and I think his back was messed up, pretty sure.
Yeah, I remember it was a back, I think 6 years ago.
6 years ago, yeah.
I mean, someone asked me, like, what do you think Carwin's chance would be? I'm like, I don't know, because we haven't seen the guy fight in 6 years.
Yeah, it's literally, I mean, think about where you were 6 years ago, where I was as well. I mean, I was still in college, which is traveling to my parents, but I think that... Shane Carwin, you have no... I would say he's definitely a much worse fighter, I would assume.
6 years ago, I was still in terrestrial radio.
Wow. You're doing Mike and the Mad Dog.
Five years ago is when I left terrestrial radio. I left in 2012.
Wow, you just go back to that fight card that Shane Carwin retired on, and it's just, man, crazy card. Main event was Carwin Dos Santos. Co-main event was Florian Diego Nunez. Mark Munoz versus Damian Maya, Dave Herman, and John Olaf Enemo. And Donald Cerrone and Wagner Rocha. What a card.
That's one of those things that sometimes, you know, when you're researching a fighter and you just look back at old events, and you just kind of see, you know, how you look at those fight cards now in comparison to how you looked at them back then.
Yeah, you can remember. I have distinct memories of these fight cards. I have distinct memories of John Olav Einemo, and it's really crazy.
It's crazy that the things you remember about certain fights in MMA.
Totally. The pre-fight hype or what you thought about the odds or the fights in particular. This is really, I mean, I feel like 2011 is really under the radar. Just great year for the sport.
Yeah, that was, what was it? Was it end of 2011 when the Fox deal got announced, as I recall?
Yep. They were still on Spike throughout the year, but then got a deal on Fox. And then I guess it'll be the end of this year when we get the next announcement.
I still say they end up back on Fox.
Yeah, either that or like some like blended TV or some weird channel I've never heard of.
It makes me, you know, I think there's something to this Amazon thing.
Oh, that'd be a bad move, I think, because people still watch TV. Like at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, I tell you, you know, I mean, you look at what's going on in Washington, D.C. with net neutrality. That could have a massive effect on, you know, how we consume television.
Porn. Oh, yeah, television. Sorry. I mean,
there's a lot of people who think that part of why there wants to be some changes is that it's about getting, you know, the cord cutters back to having the cord.
That's crazy. That sucks. Yeah, net neutrality sucks.
Well, think about if you're Netflix, how concerned Netflix has to be if this thing goes through, because they don't control, you know, they're not an internet company. They're a content provider. There could be internet companies that basically slow down Netflix.com.
Yeah, well, I tell you what. The big loser is not Netflix, but like a website called, hold up, let me just double check, Netflix, like something like that, where it's a website that is trying to be the next Netflix, but they don't have the money to spend on paying off these internet service providers to get the fast lane, so they can never be the next Netflix. They'll always be Netflix, and it's like those are the big losers.
I think I saw something where, I think they said it was Netflix, is spending $10 billion in 2018 on programming.
Yeah, yeah. So they can pay for the internet service provider. And by the way, $10 billion is actually kind of insane.
It would not surprise me in the next 2 years if Netflix has live sports on it.
Yeah, I think we should pitch this podcast to Netflix.
I'm Jason at RadioInfluence.com. I'm open to talk to you.
I think we could get ourselves a damn Netflix show with all that money. I mean, we don't need $1 billion at Netflix. Just pour it. Give us a couple figures there.
Come on, when you can make mockumentaries of a guy on there that looks just like Daniel.
Yeah, stealing. Like, they're just listening to this podcast and stealing our content.
Dude, that is your twin.
I got a, what's it called? American Dick, or what's it called?
American Vandal.
American Vandal. I'll check it out.
Dude, you look just like the main character on there.
I'll start telling that to girls. I'll say, you see that TV show?
That's me.
Yeah, what's it about? Ooh, yeah, yeah.
And I don't like, whoever wrote that show had to be drunk or high or both when they wrote that show and pitched it.
Yeah, well, definitely when they pitched it, you must have been on some type of drugs too.
And if for anyone listening who's never seen American Vandal, just go on Netflix, watch the trailer. All you need to do is watch the trailer, and you're going to know why I say the person who wrote this had to be drunk or high.
Yeah, yeah, it's a phenomenal concept that I love. And I got to actually watch this show.
I've been trying to finish up Mindhunter. I'm a big fan of that show.
Yeah, I heard that one's really good. David Fincher directed it. The show that I can't wait to start watching is Stranger Things. I really got to watch that one. I hear everyone talks about it, and I think I should actually watch it.
My wife, I was watching it the other day with my wife. I have not really watched it. It's one of those shows that, you know, I hear everyone talk about it, but it looked like a good show.
And lastly, the other thing I want to watch is Jim Carrey, when he is a documentary about Jim Carrey when he was an actor for the movie about David Arquette, and it's like behind the scenes.
The Andy Kaufman.
Yes.
And I heard,
not David Arquette, Andy Kaufman, yeah.
And they were talking about how he went so much into character for that. I saw like a trailer for it and talked about how much he went into character for that. Like, yep. he was basically Andy Kaufman the whole time.
Like a total asshole to people, like absurd, like method actor. I want to see that documentary, and that one's actually out. So, whatever stand-up comedy special they do every week.
Yeah, there is a ton of those on there, but we are going to continue the UFC 218 talk as we're going to get into the interview portion of this week's MMA Report podcast. And first up, you're going to hear my conversation with Jakar Close. Of course, going to be a part of the FS1 prelims on Saturday night, taking on David Timer. I had a chance to catch up with him earlier this week here during fight week to talk about his matchup taking place on Saturday night in Detroit, Michigan. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man's going to be a part of the UFC 218 prelims on FS1 on Saturday night. Of course, those prelims will start at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Man, we've had on the podcast many times before. Dracar Close takes on David Timor, a part of these prelims. As always, man, I really appreciate time, especially here during fight week as you are getting prepared for this. And I think everyone knows you're a Michigan guy, but this is actually the first pro fight for you in Michigan. Was this always kind of a bucket list item for you, especially being in the UFC?
Yeah, you know, just always going back home is always special to me, especially now, you know, it's my first UFC fight in Michigan. You know, hopefully, you know, the UFC goes to Michigan a lot more so I can fight there. So hopefully this is the first of many.
You know, I think some people could, on the outside looking in, saying, hey, it's great that obviously you get to fight in your home state, something you want to do, but they also could look at the pressures of that, you know, the various things that go into, you know, fighting in your home state. How do you keep that noise out of, you know, your team and not letting those pressures get to you?
To me, there is no pressure, man. It just, you know, you just got to go in there, win, lose, or draw. You know, as long as you know you gave it your all, that's all that really matters, you know. So as long as I just train hard and, you know, give it everything.
I know there was an article that came out recently at MMAfighting.com about, you know, kind of about how fans can be, but how do you believe that you can ultimately raise your profile, you know, with that mainstream U.S. fan?
It's pretty much just keep winning, keep doing what I'm doing. You know, everything else would fall into place. You know, maybe get a couple, you know, a couple finishes, you know, but, you know, winning is the, you know, the main thing I need to do.
You know, obviously the UFC fans, when they've seen you in the UFC, you've got two decision victories, but more is it, you know, is kind of the way to basically sum of this fight is, this is about me, you know, getting back to my finishing ways. Is that the best way to kind of sum this up?
Yeah, yeah, you know, just go out there and, you know, get the fight over in 30 seconds, you know. Just, you know, just go in there and putting the show on for the fans. That's how you get them.
Your fastest wins in 31 seconds. So is that kind of the a little bit of a goal for you to break your own personal record?
Yeah, that's always a plus, you know. So hopefully, you know, Saturday night I do that.
What do you remember back in June of 2015 when you got that win in 31 seconds against Gabe Rodriguez?
Oh. What was it? What did you say? What did I think?
What do you remember about that matchup? Is there something about that night that you just remember of why it was just something that, man, I saw the opening. I took advantage of it.
I was kind of mad because he came in 10 pounds over. So, you know, I just like, that's unprofessional. I'm just going to make him pay for it, you know, and I just went out there and I got the job done that quick.
I know you have talked about you are not a guy that sits there and watches film. That is something for your coaches. And I think people on the outside looking in and go, man, why does he have that mindset? Is it just more that mindset of like, look, this is about me. It's not about my opponent. Yes, I'm going to be aware of what he likes to do, but it's about concentrating on yourself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think a lot of fighters, you know, they watch so much tape where they get sucked into, you know, like, oh, if he moves this way, this is going to happen. To me, it's just a fight. It's reacting. You know, you go out there, you do what you're going to do. You know, if he stops it, what are you going to do next? You know, there's really, you can't game plan for, you know, something that's, I go out there and mess my ankle up. I have to go southpaw. You know what I mean? It's, you can't game plan for stuff like that. So I think fighters just, you know, think too big into game planning and doing all that, instead of just reacting.
Would you just simply say that your fighting style is read and react?
Pretty much, you know what I mean? Whatever to do, however to get the win, you know, I'm going to go out there and do that.
You know, of course, the last fight, there was a lot of talk between you and Mark heading into that matchup. Heading this one, it's kind of, I mean, almost kind of under the radar a little bit, especially because of all the fights that are on this fight card. But how is preparations for this fight different than the fight against Diakis?
There's no difference. Even my first pro fight, I'm doing the same thing, you know, training hard. You know, you never take an opponent lightly. So nothing's changed on my end.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see this on Saturday night, a part of the FS1 prelims. And, you know, this is now going to be your third fight in the UFC. How do you look at the fight game differently now as opposed to the first time you stepped into the UFC octagon?
The first time, you know, I was getting my feet wet, you know. Second fight, took out a top prospect. This fight, hopefully a breakthrough performance, you know, just let the UFC know that Jakar Close is here and he will be the champion.
Do you still consider yourself a prospect? And if not, is that a label that you just hate to hear people say that a part of your name?
I kind of hate to hear that because, you know, like I've been training with the best, you know what I mean? So I know what I'm capable of doing. But you know, reporters and all that, you know, they got to put something, you know, in front of your name, a prospect or whatever. So it is what it is.
What would you want reporters to put in front of your name?
The greatest.
And obviously that's what everyone's trying to accomplish. How, you know, if you were going to say, you know, a scale of 0 to 10, 10 is the greatest. Where do you think you are at right now in terms of proving you're the greatest?
Right now I'm like 6, you know, I'm still young in this game. I've only been fighting since 2011 and that was off and on. I've only really been training. I've been training 4 years at the MMA lab and those are the years that, I've been serious about, you know, fighting. So I still have a lot to learn. And, you know, with this fight, I'm gonna go out there and prove that I can compete with the best. And, you know, can't wait.
Yeah, I've talked to guys at other gyms who've talked about, you know, inside the gym, there may be a day of the week where there's a competition. I know that the Team Alpha Male guys talk about the King of the Mat competition that they have inside their gym. Is there any competition that you guys have at the MMA lab that is kind of unique to what you guys do?
We're all competitive, you know what I mean? But we're a family, you know what I mean? If one person is down, you know, we're there to help them out. So we're just trying to get better each and every day.
Now, when you talk about being competitive, I mean, are we talking about anything you do in your life? Like you're very competitive. Like if you're just, you know, sitting down playing a game with your friends or whatever it may be, like you just hate to lose.
Yeah, of course. You know, I'm the type, if I'm gonna lose, I'm gonna throw the Monopoly game on the ground and just quit.
See, now when I was growing up, I had a friend who we played video games. If like we were playing like a football game and he's like losing in the fourth quarter, he'll just go turn the controllers off and turn the TV off. Like he was that competitive. Are you that type of guy?
Oh yeah, I'll definitely slap the remote out of the partner's hand. You know, try to score a couple points while the remote's on the ground.
We mentioned it's fight week. We're just a couple of days out from this fight. So what is the next couple of days like for you?
Just sit back and relax, you know, just worry about, just getting the last couple pounds off and soaking in, you know, being around, you know, my coaches and all that, you know, you only could fight for so long. So it's all about making memories.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to watch this on Saturday night on FS1, the UFC 218 prelims. Jakar, as always, man, I really appreciate the time. Good luck coming up on Saturday night. Let my listeners know where they can follow you at on social media.
Hey, thank you for having me. Everyone can follow me at Jakar Close. That's on my Twitter, my Instagram, my Facebook. So, Jakar Close, thank you.
And there you have my conversation with Jakar Close. I appreciate him taking some time out during fight week to talk to me about his fight coming up on Saturday night. Of course, his fight will be a part of the prelims on FS1 that will begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. He will be the second fight on the FS1 prelims. The opening matchup that you'll see on TV will be Felice Herrig versus Courtney Casey. Also, a part of those prelims, you've got Alex Oliveira versus Yancy Medeiros, and your featured preliminary bout will be Charles Oliveira against Paul Felder. And look at Jakar Close. One of the things that he's going to have to overcome in this fight, and I do believe his wrestling will be the key to his victory in that matchup. He does have a 3-inch reach disadvantage in this fight. A 70-inch reach for him, 73-inch for David. So we'll see how that goes. Very good fight there in the lightweight division. And, you know, as you heard earlier in the show, myself and Daniel just talking about it, a great fight card on Saturday night for UFC 218. Now, coming up next week, it is UFC Fight Night 123 from Fresno, California. Of course, that fight card is going to be headlined by a featherweight matchup between Cub Swanson and Brian Ortega. And our next guest is going to be a part of the prelims on FS1, and that is Andre Sukuntha. Of course, I've had Andre here on the podcast before. He is stepping up on short notice to replace Brian Caraway against Luke Sanders. And I did have a chance to catch up with Andre here this week and talk to him about his matchup next week in Fresno against Luke Sanders. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man stepping up on relative short notice to take on Luke Sanders, UFC Fight Night 123, next week in Fresno, California, Andre Sukuntha. Andre, as always, man, I appreciate the time. I got to tell you, when I was getting ready to set this interview up, because I knew that you were now represented by Top Game, I was sending a message to their PR guy. And my phone has now realized if I go S-O-U-K, it already puts your name in. So I don't even have to spell out your whole last name.
That's the best part, right?
it is the best part about the iPhone. But you're stepping up here on short notice. You know, this is a matchup that, you know, you saw. You saw the opening was there. You know, nothing personal, just an opportunity for you here. You know, was it just simply one of those things? You saw that Brian was out, and it's like, hey, man, get on the phone. Let's see if we can get this fight to take place.
You know, I was eyeing a lot of the cards at the end of the year, and there was so many bantamweight fights. So I was like, you know, someone's bound to pull out or get hurt, and I was willing to go against anybody. You know, I wasn't like in fight camp, but I was always training. You know, I'm always training, I'm always developing. Yeah, so I saw that Brian Caraway pulled out, and it was against Luke Sanders, and you know, with no hesitation, you know, I've been dying to fight. And when you're 0-2 in the UFC, I'm in no position to call the shot to get what I want. You know, I wanted to be on the Boston card. I originally wanted to be on the Fresno card. And I was just getting some responses, you know, like an 0-2 guy, getting treated like an 0-2 guy. So when I saw the opportunity, you know, I figured I had two and a half weeks to train for the fight. I was just like, you know what? Rather than the UFC controlling, you know, when I fight, when I get paid, here's an opportunity for me to control my destiny and fight. And there you have it. You know, I need to get a W by the end of 2017. So it's coming.
2017 obviously has not gone the way you would hope. Both split decision losses here in the UFC. How do you recover from those? You know, is it one of those things that you just go back and you kind of look at the fight and you try to see why two of the three judges in both those fights thought you didn't win?
Man, you know, the first fight, it's really, I'm not, you know, I kind of beat myself up a little bit for going for the takedown, but you know, I was dead tired. I took that fight in about 8 days notice. And, you know, if that's the way the judges saw it, then that's the way they saw it. You know, I'm cool with that. The second fight in Mexico, obviously, I felt like I won the fight. A lot of people felt like I won the fight against a tough fighter in his country. You know, I dropped him three times. He didn't do nothing to me. You know, he might have took me down. One of the takedowns I slipped, and he couldn't even hold me down. You know, he probably had riding control for about a minute altogether in the fight, and he never landed any clean shots, and I definitely feel like I won that fight. But what can you do? You know, I lost split decision. It was heartbreaking. I was a little depressed a little bit after the fight. That's why I need to get this one back, you know. And you know, partly of it was my fault for losing that fight in Mexico. I could have beat him easily. You know, he's Ultimate Fighter winner. He's knocked out. He's finished a lot of tough guys. He's beat a lot of tough guys in the UFC. And that was the sixth UFC fight. That was only my second. So for me to go on and put on a show like that, you know, these 135ers know that I'm not playing. And I could have easily put him away, you know, but I was just thinking too much of the altitude. And I didn't want to gas myself out. And he has good cardio. And also, I was trying too much to
put on the show, you know? Since I got signed to the UFC, I wanted to be that guy that everybody loves to watch fight, which I still am, but I've been focusing too much on that and putting on a show and playing the villain in Mexico because I was getting booed by a bunch of fans. But now I'm back to my roots, what got me here, you know, and that's fighting hungry. That's fighting. I need two checks because, you know, one check just doesn't do it. I have kids. I have a wife. I got to support them and put food on the table, pay my mortgage, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, I got my old mentality back. And it's sad that I'm learning this way, you know, but it happens sometimes. It happens sometimes. You know, it's easy to have a dream, but it's harder to live it.
Is it just basically, I guess, the way to sum it up is lessons learned and moved on? And is it kind of, do you view this fight as almost kind of a reintroduction of who you are to the UFC fan?
So-and-so. I mean, if you're a UFC fan and, you know, and you've seen me fight, you will obviously remember me. You know what I mean? Even if you weren't a fan, you will obviously remember me from those two fights if you've seen them. You know, everybody knows that I'm an entertaining fighter. I go out and I hit hard, and I like to scrap. So nothing's going to change this fight. I'm still the same fighter. I like to scrap. I like to fight. I don't mind getting hit, and I don't mind giving it back. But you will see a finish in the UFC, you know. Out of my 11 wins, I have 10 finishes, submissions, TKOs, KOs when the guys are sleeping on the mat. And you're going to see one of those. The UFC is going to see one of those this upcoming fight.
You know, the cliche we always hear in the fight game is, you know, stylistically, I love this matchup. I love this fight for myself. So why do you like this matchup for yourself?
You know what, Jason? Like I said, it's not impersonal, man. You know, I think that's what separates me from a lot of the guys in the UFC. I'm probably one of the only guys in my division that would do something like this. You know what I'm saying? It's Thanksgiving. And I'm saying, you know, forget Thanksgiving. I want to fight. Put me in. So I'm not eating on Thanksgiving. And it's against a really tough opponent that has a lot of good experience. And I'm going in there 0-2. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, everybody knows what happens when you lose 3 in a row in the UFC. You know what I'm saying? Most of the people get cut. But I'm willing to take that risk, man. I'm willing to take that risk. You know why? Because I'm 29 years old. I still love what I do. I know that I have huge potential, and I'm way too talented to just let that opportunity slip by. Like I said, I take pride in calling myself a fighter, and that's what I really am. You know, people might think it's not smart management-wise, for my career-wise, but I don't care. I always bounce back. You know, I always have roadblocks in my life, in my career. And I always bounce back stronger. And this is what's going to happen. I'm going to bounce back stronger.
I understand there is pressure, no matter what, you know, what's happening in your previous fights. You know, there's always pressure in fighting. But do you feel maybe a little more pressure in this fight as, say, opposed to your first two UFC fights?
Absolutely. You know, my job's on the line. And I'm risking a lot here. I asked for this. You know, it's not like the UFC, Sean Shelby called and was like, Andre, take this fight. You want to take this fight? I can't say no. You know, I'm 0-2. I have to say yes. But I'm the one that reached out and was like, hey, I'll take the fight. If no one's going to take it, which I know no one will take it, would have took it. Unless it was somebody dying to get into the UFC. But somebody in the roster, I doubt somebody was going to say, hey, you know, I'll fight in 2 weeks. I'm that guy. I'm that guy that doesn't care. I just want to go in, perform, and do what I do, you know. And it's not about the money. It's not about the glory. It's not about the fame. I want to be a champion one day, you know, and I'm just taking this opportunity.
And, of course, train down there in South Florida. Are you working with anybody over the last 2 weeks, maybe different type of sparring partners just to get ready for this fight than maybe guys that you normally work with?
Man, it's been crazy because I kind of went back home to the Northeast, to Rhode Island. And then right when I got off the plane, I was with my son. I got the call like, hey, you got the fight. So I'm like, damn. if I got the plane before, if I got the call before I got on the plane, I wouldn't even went on the plane. So I had to really readjust for like 2-3 days. You know, it was kind of hectic, kind of chaotic. Staying at my parents' house, and it was kind of cold. But I was getting my training in with a lot of my old coaches, old teammates, and a lot of the guys from Top Game Management. So, you know, I adapted, and although it was a little chaotic, you know, flying back and forth from Florida to Rhode Island in a span of, like, you know, 1 week, it'll make that win that much sweeter. You know, it'll make the win that much sweeter for me.
Now, while you're up there, I know, you know, your buddy old Rabella likes to throw some jabs at you. Did you get him back with any jabs?
No, I avoided him, man. I don't want to see his face.
Greg likes to rag on everybody. He's been ragging me about my magic. It's been magic got off to a good start, but it's been a little rough the past couple of weeks. Magic, I mean, have come down to reality.
After that knockout KO, I try to stay away from him. I'm gonna give him at least 3 months before I see him in person, because that head is probably so big right now. So I just gotta stay away from him. Stay away from him.
Of course, we all know you have been known for those flashy knockouts. We all remember those flashy knockouts at CS. And one of the things I've always thought about you is, at some point, do we see you and Brian Kelleher, you know, square up again?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, Jason, you know me by now. I'm down to fight anybody. Anybody. I don't care, you know. As long as I love doing it, and I, you know, as long as I continue to love doing what I do, I'm going to fight. I love fight week. That's my only work week that we actually get the glory for, you know what I mean? And I live for that. I'm training 365 days a week, but everybody knows that we don't get paid. We don't get the glory. We don't get the glory while we're training in the gym. You know, we get the glory when it's fight week, when everything's taken care of, when we're just, all we got to worry about is cutting weight. So if the UFC called me to fight Brian Kelleher, hell yeah, I'll fight him again. I know we're kind of on different paths, you know what I mean? He's having a lot of success in the UFC right now. You know, he has two $50,000 bonuses. He won two fights. So he's kind of on a different path right now. But we will meet again, you know, and he's a good fighter. He has a great guillotine, but hey, he tapped out some top 13 in the world at that time, top 15 guy in the world at that time. He had me in that for about 3 minutes, and I didn't tap out. I actually gave him a good fight. So, you know, I'll fight anybody. You know that.
I think there's just a good storyline there. I think that's something that the UFC can sell. You mentioned about how much you are looking forward to fight week next week. I got to ask, do you have the walkout song picked out already?
I don't, man. I'm real funny with that. I just go with my gut, and I'm like, hey, I like the song, and I'll just go with it. You know what I mean? So I don't.
But of course, this is going to be next week, UFC Fight Night 123 there in Fresno, California. Have you ever been to California before?
I never been to California, so I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see Cali. I love Vegas. Like I love the scenery. Like, you know, besides the strip is cool. You know what I mean? Like for one night.
Yeah,
but you know, I'll probably do that for like one night if I'm there for a week. But the rest, I love the locals. I like the food, and I like the mountains. I like just looking at the mountains, driving down the highway and seeing the mountains. I love that, so I can't wait to go to California.
Yeah, we can't get that in Florida. We can't get the mountains here in Florida.
Yeah, I still love Florida. You know, I love the Florida ocean better than anything because there's no waves all the time. You know, and but definitely excited to go to Cali.
And, of course, we'll be able to see this fight next week on FS1. Andre, man, as always, I appreciate time. And let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you guys following me on Instagram and Twitter, Andre Souk MMA. Got some good picks, got some good stories. Follow my fight week. Also, like my fan page, Andre the Asian Sensation. Souk 'em tough. Don't have to spell my own name, but show up. So come on.
And that was my conversation with Andre Sukumtha. I really appreciate him coming on the podcast. Talk about his matchup coming up next week at UFC Fight Night 123, as he'll be a part of the prelims on FS1 as he takes on Luke Sanders. And when you look at that fight card lineup, of course, myself and Daniel will get into previewing this fight card next week. But very interesting the fact that Marlon Moraes versus Aljamain Sterling is not the co-main event of this fight card, according to the fight card lineup currently on UFC.com. The co-main event is listed as Jason Knight versus Gabriel Benitez. Kind of interesting that that's co-main event and not Moraes and Sterling, to top 135-pound fighters. And we'll see how Andre does. I mean, you hear him talk about, you know, clearly his back is against the wall here. When you've dropped your first two fights in the UFC, you know, he's obviously, you know, you hear it in his voice. You can tell. He knows he's got to go out there and get the win. But, of course, that will be next Saturday night, UFC Fight Night 123. There's also some other interesting matchups a part of that fight card that definitely have me interested. Eric Anders is on that fight card. Of course, Eric has made an immediate impact in the UFC. Also, you got Al Morales, the guy we've had on the podcast multiple times before. He's going to be taking on Benito Lopez. Also, some other notable fighters on this fight card. You've got Alexis Davis, Liz Carmouche. Of course, that fight is at 125 pounds. So you know, in terms of, but obviously to me, the fight, you know, the two big fights on that fight card, the main event, Swanson Ortega, and then Moraes and Sterling are definitely the two reasons to be home next Saturday night to watch UFC Fight Night 123. But coming up next, we're going to talk to a man that's going to be heading over to Italy as part of Bellator 190 next Saturday, and that is Brandon Gertz. Of course, Brandon is coming off that loss against Derek Campos earlier this year. I had a chance to catch up with Brandon and talk to him about his matchup next week at Bellator 190. Bellator 190 is next Saturday in Italy, and we're now joined by one of the men that's going to be a part of this card that you can watch on Spike next Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It's Brandon Gertz. Brandon, as always, man, I appreciate the time. You know, in the fight game, you never know how you're going to get notoriety in this game. You know, obviously winning does it, but I feel like even though you lost your last fight and with the ending in a doctor stoppage, I feel like your notoriety and people knowing you in MMA grew. Do you kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, everybody comes to watch a fight, you know, and our last fight, that was a hell of a fight. It was a bloody fight, you know, and That was the most adversity I've ever been through, you know, in a fight. And, you know, I think you saw the best fighter, you know, version of me that you've ever seen. And, you know, like I said, like the worst that ever happened to me, I bled that bad. And I think I fought back better than I ever have.
How many stitches did you have to get that night?
I think it was like 30 to 40. I think he overdid it, though. I mean, the doc that called the fight was stitching it up too, so I feel like he overdid it. I think he was compensating, you know, but
I mean, look, as a fighter, you don't want the doctor to come in and stop the fight. But can you look back at it now and understand why the doctor made the decision he made, or do you kind of feel like, hey man, I was ready to fight, just let me go?
No. Even looking back at it, I look at it as worse. You know, at the moment, maybe I was like, yeah, it's bad. But when I look back at the video and when he stopped, you know, when they looked at it in the first and they said, as long as it doesn't get worse, we're not going to stop it. Well, the cut never changed. They let me fight a whole round and the cut never changed one bit from round one through round two. You know, so that part really made me mad watching the video. And he says it in the video. You can hear him say, if it gets down to the eyebrow, we're going to have to stop it. Well, it never moved. Never got to my eyebrow. It never changed. So if he was going to stop it, he should have stopped it after round one. But he let me fight a whole nother round. The cut never changed. Not even a millibit. Never changed. So that's what really pisses me off. You know, I mean, I went a whole round with it exactly the same, you know, and then they decided to stop it. That's what hurt.
Because I remember that night, I mean, I remember watching the fight, and I was thinking, okay, if they didn't stop it at their first round, you didn't think they were going to stop it after the second round. But ultimately, you know, look, it's that's in the past. You got to move on. You now get this opportunity in Italy. I think it was about a week or so ago when we actually found out about this fight. But how long have you actually known?
I've known for a while. By the time I fight, I had about a 10-week camp. I don't know why they waited so long to announce the card. You know, it's a stacked looking card. You know, with
other fights on the MMA, plus the kickboxing portion is ridiculous. So I don't know, you know, why. Like I said, I signed my contract over 8 weeks ago. So this has been one I've been able to really prepare for.
And to go fight in Italy, what is the biggest thing you have to deal with in going overseas and fighting? Is it just making sure that, you know, there's no jet lag or anything along those lines?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. I think it's just I've never gone that far to fight. You know, I tell you the truth, I've never even traveled that far. You know, so just dealing with the jet lag, we're going to be going out. I actually fly out tomorrow. So I'm going to be going out there a little bit early just to acclimate, you know, those first few days. People tell me it takes maybe 2 to 3 days to really acclimate and adjust. So I'm going to go out there a little bit early just to allow myself to do that. You know, I don't want to go out there and just be tired and not be able to entertain and put on a show for everybody out there.
And, of course, it's a big weekend for your gym. Of course, it's well known that you train with Justin Gaethje. So is it one of those things of, are you going over there solo for a couple of days and then your rest of your team's going to join you?
My coach will be there with me right away. And, you know, my girl, she comes with me, so it'll be good. And then hopefully, you know, Gaethje goes out there and puts him out there quick so he'll be out there about Wednesday, you know. So hopefully his goes how it should. So the whole squad can be there. But, yeah, it's how we did it the last time, too, when we both put together back-to-back, I say, fight of the nights. So, and like I said, we train together every day, and that's how we go in there and we train against each other.
How does he make you a better fighter?
You know, it's the heart the kid has. The heart and the push he has in the gym. He's always pushing me to keep going. It's never – I never get those days to just kind of – lay back because he's always there to push me. It's kind of crazy. I've never quite had a training partner like that. Not just because of his style. It's just he cares. You know, he cares. He wants me to push him. You know, it's a back and forth battle in there. So I love having that competition. You know, me and him just basically compete all the time in all our workouts, and it's a good way to keep the edge.
In terms of the United States fan, your opponent here, Luca, is a relative unknown. He is 10-2 in his career, trains at SBG. He's won 4 in a row. As you have dissected his game, what really sticks out to you about what he does the best?
You know, he's a tough guy. I think he's a tough guy. I think he's got a good ground game. That's what I've seen the most. He's, you know, he's tall. He's got that going for him. you know, I just look out there. I think he's going to come to fight. I think we'll definitely put on a fight for the fans. I know watching his tape and stuff, that turns out to me, I know he's never fought competition like me before. So that's definitely going to be a big, big change for him. He's never really stepped in there with a animal like me.
When he hasn't faced someone like you, can it be tough to evaluate him? In terms of, I mean, you talk about your last fight, you had to deal with adversity and it brought out the best in you. Is it tough to evaluate him because he hasn't fought someone that you believe is on your level?
It's a little tougher because you can't see, you know, when push comes to shove, what he does. He went out there and you can, the three fights that my manager sent me to watch, you know, he finished his guys all in the first round, but you could tell there's levels of this shit. You could tell that, you know, he was a step above all those guys, you know, so it's really hard to gauge, you know, what he will actually do, you know, when you step in there with two fighters like us. So like you said, yeah, it's definitely tough, but I know what I train for. I'm training, I'm doing my stuff. I'm not as worried about what he's going to be trying to do.
Anyone who follows you on social media at Brandon Gertz MMA, they'll see your dog comes up in your timeline a lot. I was getting a kick out of you having your dog on the chair while you're going shopping. That was pretty funny. So who takes care of your dog when you're going overseas here?
Me. Beachy's making the trip. Beachy's making the trip, man. He's a world traveler. He's a world traveler. He's that's my companion, man. It's not just, Beachy's just not a dog to me. You know, I've always been very close with animals, and that's my companion, you know. So he's making the trip, man. He's flown more than probably half the world, half the people in this world. So he does great. It'll be a little bit longer flight, but that guy just falls asleep and wakes up.
So how long of a flight is it from Colorado to Italy?
Well, we got to go to Newark first, and then I think it's like a 12-hour flight, 11-hour flight maybe, something like that. I'm not 100%. I kind of been keeping details out of my head.
I mean, is it one of those things of like you just trying to figure out, okay, if I can't fall asleep on this plane, what entertainment can I have?
Yeah, you know, downloading videos and making sure I got books. You know, I usually sleep pretty well on planes, so I'm expecting to get a good. You know, they red eye you over there, so it'll be through the night. So I'm not too concerned about that. I think I'll be all right.
Any books you're reading right now?
I got a book on adversity, so that's one I'm looking for. You know, I like reading. Not much into like fiction books or stuff like that. I kind of like reading, you know, stuff to stimulate the mind. Usually, I'm not one to get through too many books. Let me put it that way. But I like to read the mind stimulating books.
I'm the same way. I'll start reading a book. I might read it for a couple of days, and I'm done with it. I'll get like halfway through it, and I don't read the rest.
Yeah, even if they're good, just something about it, I got to go to the next one. You know, I don't know what it is. It's hard for me to finish.
I've talked to a lot of guys about MMA rules because there's a lot of talk about, you know, what rules should be changed. For you, if you could add or change any rule to the sport, what would it be?
You know, judges. I would make it like how refs are. You know, they travel around, they, you know, judge the fights, and, you know, you got a good judging record, they put you on the bigger fights, stuff like that. I think judges are part of the worst thing about our sport, you know. I think it's too much of an opinion. And you go so many places and you see so many people get screwed by judges because they half the people, you know, don't know much about MMA. They've never fought in their life. They can't give an accurate, you know, description of fighting, I believe. Some of these places, you don't know who the judges are going to be in everywhere you go, really. You know, like say they have an event somewhere new. You don't know. Look at the judges in New York. You know, I've seen a lot of problems there. And I would love it if judges traveled like refs do. You know, hold them more accountable for their actions, you know. Otherwise, you get these judges and it's an opinion. And half the time you can talk to, I've had judges come to me after fights and they try to explain to me what happened. And half the time they sound dumb. You don't even know, they'll contradict themselves and tell you why one thing, then they'll judge another fight and judge it completely different. So that really pees me off. I felt there's been a few times that I've been screwed, and I've plenty of times seen other people been screwed.
Would you at all consider being a ref or judge once your fighting career is over?
Yeah, absolutely. I think judges, refing's a tougher one. Who knows about that? I feel like that's damn near its own sport. But judging, I feel like it should be fighters. I feel like it should be people more knowledgeable that have been in the game for years, you know, not just somebody that's, you know, watched a few fights. That's what I believe some of these people are. And, yeah, I would definitely like to be a judge, and I feel like judges should definitely be ex-MMA fighters.
Do you think that judges should be sitting backstage in front of a television set so they can't hear the crowd, though? Because, I mean, if you're in a situation where, you know, say you're fighting a hometown fighter, and, you know, the crowd reacts because he throws a jab and it lands, but you land, you know, four or five jabs and there is no reaction. I mean, do you think that maybe that's a tweak that should be considered?
Look, I mean, absolutely. That could definitely be one. I mean, look at Brazil. You know, I mean, they throw a punch, it misses, but the Brazilian crowd yells, and then the American lands something, it's dead quiet. You know, like, look at that. That's one of the craziest places, you know.
Yeah.
I that's a great idea, too. I think it's a little tough because the face-to-face and stuff, and you can hear the punches differently is one thing, but I do think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I know just being cage-sided fights, there's sometimes where people will question a scorecard, and I say, when you're right there at the fight, you can see whether a shot lands or whether it misses, and I've seen, you know, various fights where that takes place. But, yeah, I do feel that there is commissions who are trying, at least trying. I think the big part of it I would love to see, and this is just from the reporter aspect of it, is more judges that would publicly come out and explain their scorecards.
Yeah, you don't see that too often. They, like I said, it's no opinion. You know,
they're discouraged from doing it. They're told not to go public.
They don't have much ground to stand by, if you ask me. Most of the time, like I said, most of them are unqualified, I believe.
Maybe it should be like fighters. If they don't get a victory that night, they lose half their paycheck.
Something needs to be done. I see it too many times, and this is a tough sport. And half the time, people are losing half their money because of what a person's opinion was, you know, or their career. You know, some people losing title fights, losing big fights just because some judge saw it a crazy way. You see it time and time again, you know. And this is our lives, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's absolutely a huge deal. But we're going to be able to see your fight next Saturday night in Italy here in the United States on Spike at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Brandon, as always, man, I appreciate time. And to let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Just check me out at Brandon Gertz MMA on Instagram, Twitter, and then just Brandon Gertz on Facebook.
And there you have my conversation with Brandon Gertz. I really appreciate him coming on the podcast to talk about his fight coming up next week at Bellator 190. Of course, that is a fight card that will air via tape delay here in the United States at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Honestly, a baffling decision, but it is what it is. You know, I mean, I don't understand the decision of why Bellator and Spike would put a Bellator event up against a tape delay event, up against a live UFC event. Just doesn't make a lot of sense, especially when they've gone to Italy in the past. They put these cards live in the afternoon on Saturday, but of course that fight card going to be headlined by Rafael Carvalho defending the middleweight title against Alessio Sakar. Of course, you just heard from Brandon as well, and you're going to have a lot of Italy talent on that fight card, and we'll see if Brandon can snap that 3-fight losing streak. I really appreciate Brandon coming on the podcast. Now, coming up on Friday of this week here in the United States in St. Louis, it is going to be Shamrock FC 300, and I had an opportunity to catch up with their matchmaker, Rob Doniker, and talk to him about the fight card and talk about some other things going on with Shamrock FC. Shamrock FC 300 is coming up on Friday night from the River City Casino in St. Louis. Now joined by the matchmaker of Shamrock FC, Rob Doniker. Rob, I appreciate the time. Obviously, this is a huge event for Shamrock FC coming up on Friday night. You got a nice matchup here. As a matchmaker, I mean, with it being the 300 show, did you kind of feel like you had to kind of make this a special fight card?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've been doing it coming up on 20 years, starting in 2018. So definitely wanted to try to maximize the talent we have, signed athletes plus some other ones. So that way we can put together a great card for everybody as this kind of milestone event comes forward.
As you think about this being a 300 show, I mean, I'm sure you have a ton of great memories, but is there maybe any memories from, the early days that really stick out to you?
You know, over time, we've kind of changed venues quite a bit over the years. So, I mean, I think the most memorable one is probably 2012 when we really got into the casinos here. And the first one we got into was with Lumiere Casino, which was owned by Pinnacle, and that started a really good relationship with us here. So we've expanded now, and we're going to be in additional casinos next year. We added one here locally, so we're kind of moving forward from there and growing at the same time.
As I look at your fight card, there's a couple of names that stick out to me, guys I've had a chance to talk to in the past. Rashard Lovelace, who's trying to bounce back from a loss, and the other one is Arian Zecchi, who definitely has it down on knowing how to promote a fight. You know, he had that one loss, but he's bounced back here. I mean, but for you as a matchmaker, is there a fight outside of the main event on this fight card that really sticks out to you that fans need to be paying attention to?
You know, honestly, there's a couple on the main card there. I say one that's really going to be maybe a sleeper that no one's really talking about is Joe Mueller versus Matt Murphy. Joe Mueller's a world-class Muay Thai fighter, probably over 30 Muay Thai fights. He's been all over the world fighting. He's making his MMA debut against, you know, a veteran of the sport who's probably got 30 MMA fights between, you know, his amateur and professional, which is Matt Murphy. I can't see that one going to the ground at all, and both of them are stand-up strikers. So that one sticks out in my mind that shouldn't probably be the first one on the main card, but we put it there just because it's a very exciting fight, get people interested and get people watching and get people excited about it.
Is that one of those things that, that you and Jesse sit down and when you're thinking about, you know, the fights that are going to be in the main card, is about, okay, you know, is it about finding that one fight that you're like, man, this is the fight that's ultimately, you know, set the night off and this is what's going to get the fans, whether, you know, they're in attendance or they're watching on ShamrockFightingChampionships.com?
You know, there is. It's a group effort, actually. We even get down to the point to where our PR guy, Jeremy Johnson, gets involved in kind of seeing what our order should be for it. At the same time, just with we've got our graphic designers and our videographer who really sits back with us every day and when we have our meetings. And, you know, it's kind of a group effort here with the team to say, you know, what do we think should be the order? Who do we think is going to be more exciting? And, you know, just kind of powwow on it and really put the card together. And it seemed to work over the all these years, so we keep going forward with that.
This card, Garrett Gross versus Garrett Muir, two guys I think a lot of people would recognize their names. What intrigued you about this matchup?
You know, Garrett Gross is a guy that's, you know, been with us for years, probably at least 3-4 years now. Even before that, he fought a couple amateur fights with us. He's really grown as a athlete and also as a person. So for that fight, you've got two tough guys. Neither one of them are going to back down. Looking at Garrett Muir has never been knocked out, never been really dropped by a punch. He's been head kicked. I mean, he just doesn't go down. You know, Garrett's going to throw hard punches. Both of them are going to come forward. So looking at that card and seeing what probably the best fight on that card would be is those two guys. Both of them are trying to make a run at our title, I think. We've kind of had some discussions with them. They're up there in the rankings. So that's going to kind of see who's going to be a superior 155er for us.
You also got another fighter on this card that a lot of people remember. It has not gone well for him in his past couple of fights here, and that's Adam Sella. You know, Adam is a guy that, I mean, he always probably going to remember for what happened on The Ultimate Fighter. You know, when you have a guy that's not, you know, that's struggled recently, how do you, is it tough to find him matches, or is it one of those things that, you know, really it's not difficult?
You know, with Adam, what it is, you know, goes back to, you know, anybody that's on a losing streak that's got the UFC and The Ultimate Fighter behind him. You know, everybody wants their name, you know, his name on their record as a win. So tough, yeah, sometimes, but majority of the time I can find a guy that's ready to jump on board no matter who it is, no matter what skill level, just because they want that name on their record saying, hey, you know, I beat a UFC guy that was in Ultimate Fighter. Yeah, he has had a skid lately. I think he's lost six out of his last seven. You know, not all of them, you know, truly losses. He lost a close split decision in someone else's hometown. His last fight was a disqualification, controversial one about elbows to the back of the head. So, I mean, it's one of those things that's, I think he's kind of came to a point in his career where before he was doing it more for fun. And now he's kind of rethought that and said, you know, let me really buckle down. He's changed a couple things in his training, a couple things in his routine. And I think this is going to be a new improved Adam when we see him this weekend.
Of course, it is a long night of fights. I believe it's 15 fights that you have coming up on Friday night. When you look at that preliminary card, is, you know, a lot of, you know, guys who are young in their career, but is there someone that, you know, really it's more of you're interested to see how they perform?
Yeah, I'd say Colin Parr is a very good athlete. Plus, he's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. He trains under UFC veteran Kyle Watson. So he's someone that's, I believe he's 8-2 now as an amateur. So he's someone that I think is very close to that level to where he could possibly make that pro step. He's going to be taking on a very tough guy, Miguel Libizzo, who's also a jiu-jitsu guy. So we'll see how that fight goes. Very interesting to me to see, you know, how Colin does with that, being another jiu-jitsu guy. He's kind of had the upper hand being a purple belt lately in his couple of his fights, but I think he's going to be someone to really watch. Another two guys we've got together would be Justin Angel, and he's fighting Mark Kirkland. Both those guys come straight forward, very talented guys. Justin Angel, military kid who took some time off, I think 3-4 years took off in between his last fight and the fight before that. So he's coming back, and Mark Kirkland's moving down a little bit in weight, trying to make that slow transition into the lightweight division to where I think he's going to be at when he hits that pro level.
Generally speaking, is it harder to matchmake an amateur fight than a pro fight?
You know, yes and no. You know, on the pro fight, you obviously have bout agreements, bout contracts. You know, guys that we have signed, so they're chomping at the bit. You know, amateur fights, you know, in the beginning, I think, their first couple fights, it's a little tougher just because you got guys that, you know, aren't 100% dedicated. You know, guys get injured or just feel like not fighting, you know, 2 weeks out. But as far as where we're at here in St. Louis and with Kansas City, I mean, both of them are very good cities to where MMA has really boomed lately, especially, you know, you got Tyron Woodley coming out of here. You got Michael Chandler. Kansas City had Bobby Volker, James Krause, the guys at Glory. So it's starting to develop a lot. And, you know, I think over time, those gyms that were just kind of throw together gyms have kind of went to the wayside. And we got gyms that are now producing good fighters.
You know, Bellator has come into that St. Louis market. The UFC is coming in January for a fight night card. How do you think that affects Shamrock FC going forward? Is it one of those things that you look at and say, the UFC coming to town is ultimately going to just put more eyeballs on our promotion?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Bellator's, we have had a great relationship with Scott Coker over the years, dating back to Strikeforce days. So when he wanted to come here, we said we're all about it. We'll help out in any way we can. UFC coming here just, you know, solidifies that, you know, St. Louis, part of the Midwest, is definitely a MMA city, and they recognized it just like they did in Kansas City when they went there, what, 3 months ago, 4 months ago. Yeah. So I think it definitely brings eyeballs that, you know, some people out there that are just truly, quote unquote, UFC fans that don't really follow MMA, I think it really can open the doors for us there to say, hey, you know, there's other MMA promotions that are here locally that are still doing it and doing it all the time. So I think it could increase our fan base quite a bit.
And who knows, we could see some Shamrock guys potentially get their UFC opportunity on that fight card. They do like to try to get some local guys. I mean, I've always said you got to have – I mean, if Tyron Woodley is healthy, I don't see how you don't go to St. Louis without Woodley.
Yeah, I don't know. That's they really haven't said much about it. You know, they're lingering out there about the Diaz, whether it's on, whether it's not. You know, I noticed that I think it's Adam Sell is kind of anxious to see how what's his name comes into his town and performs.
Uriah Hall,
correct. So I was joking with him the other day, asking if he's going to have front row seat for it, see if there's another knockout or not. So
yeah, of course he's always going to be linked to Uriah Hall no matter what. I mean, that's
he's on every highlight video around, every perfect knockout. So
that's got to. I mean, I have to imagine just Adam's got to turn the channel when he sees that.
You know, he's got a good mindset about it. You know, he's one of those guys that got into MMA just trying to lose weight out of high school, ended up doing pretty well with kickboxing and stuff, made that transition. He's a union iron worker. So, I mean, it's more of one of those things where it's just kind of a hobby at first, and I think now it's kind of turned more into, okay, what can we do with it? And I think that's kind of his mindset going into this fight and through his training camp from what I've seen and heard, that he's going to actually – be a different person this fight.
Speaking of how he got in the MMA, how did you get in MMA?
You know, me and Jesse started the company back in 1998. So it's a pretty unique situation that we just kind of met. He was kickboxing. You know, we were working together and just wanted to, we figured there was a void for the fan experience pretty much for fights. It just wasn't one of those things where you just throw it into a gymnasium and put fights on. So we went in and, you know, some people that we knew in the nightclubs and stuff like that really started something different, you know, make it more of a fan friendly place to where it's more of a nightclub feel, a social environment, and somewhere fun to go, just not to watch fights.
And of course, it's coming up on Friday night, Shamrock FC 300 from the River City Casino in St. Louis. If you're not in the St. Louis area, you can watch this event, shamrockfightingchampionships.com. Rob, I really appreciate the time, and have some good fights on Friday night, man.
Great. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
And I appreciate Rob coming on the podcast to preview Friday's Shamrock FC 300 in St. Louis at the River City Casino. As I mentioned in that interview, if you're not in the St. Louis area and you do want to watch that event, shamrockfightingchampionships.com to watch the live stream of that event. I want to thank all my guests coming on this week's podcast, Rekar Close, Andre Sukrunthaw,
Brandon Gertz and Rob Doniker. The interviews with Andre, Brandon, and Rob were all done in video. Those will be up in video form on the MMA Report YouTube channel. Also, we'll post the interview with Jakar Close as well, as that was just done via the phone. So I really do appreciate all of those men coming on the podcast this week. Of course, you can always check out this podcast on RadioInfluence.com. Podcast comes out every Wednesday. Be sure, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, please do that on Apple Podcasts. You know, you heard earlier in the show myself and Daniel talking about college football. And if you're a college football junkie like me, you want to check out the Landry Football Podcast here on Radio Influence, as his episode on Tuesday of this week was all about just the chaos of what is going on with the head coaching scene in college football. Chris offers just a great insight. It's one of those podcasts you listen to that you do feel that you learn something new every episode that he does have. Speaking of learning something new, myself and Sam Kaplan are starting to work on a new episode of the MMA Insiders Podcast. That's going to come out sometime in the month of December. So, you know, if there's anything that you want to hear me and Sam talk about, I mean, Sam obviously offers a great perspective, and I learn something about the MMA game every time I talk to Sam. Let me know. You shoot me an email, jason@radioinfluence.com. Tweet at me, @Jason_Floyd. You can also hit me up on the MMA Report Facebook as well, facebook.com/the MMA Report. Multiple ways to get in touch with me. And, of course, if there's ever anything you want to hear myself talk about here on the podcast, or here myself and Daniel talk about here on the podcast, multiple ways that you can connect with the show and get your question and comments in there. Really would appreciate if, you love this show, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. I really would appreciate that. Coming up next week on the podcast, Daniel will join me. We'll recap everything that happens this weekend in MMA, as we've got a busy Friday and Saturday. Really looking forward to UFC 218 on Saturday night, and just an unbelievable night of fights. Just looks like an unbelievable night of fights. Of course, I'll be watching the fights on Friday as well, with Bellator and the Ultimate Fighter finale. Really interested to see Sam Sicilia making his Bellator debut on Friday night against Marcus Galvo. Of course, that'll be a part of the prelims. Look forward to that matchup. Also, some fun fights there on the Bellator card, and we'll see how everything does shape out the Ultimate Fighter finale. As I mentioned earlier on in the podcast when had Daniel on, I will have a Ultimate Fighter 26 finale interview up on the MMAReport.com on Thursday of this week, of a fighter that's going to be on that fight card as well. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the MMA Report Podcast, which, of course, you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
What do you think? Do you think there's a little bit of hypocrisy that's going on right now? Because obviously WWE was not going to allow at the time Kurt Angle to wrestle for them. Therefore, he went to TNA, right? But now WWE is basically saying, oh yeah, you can wrestle for us now. However, on the flip side, Daniel Bryan is not being allowed to wrestle, even though he has a desire to do it. And I've actually heard that he's even said he would sign waivers, basically releasing any type of responsibility. My question to you, David, is do you think at any point in time, Daniel Bryan, through Vince McMahon or anybody, will ever get the clearance to wrestle again in their promotion?
No, I don't think they'll ever let him wrestle again. And I think it's two totally different situations. When it came to Kurt Angle back in the day, leaving and going to WWE, to TNA, sorry, a lot of that had to do with personal issues that Kurt was having. They didn't feel comfortable continuing with him, and he eventually did get those personal issues fixed and has been a model citizen, so to speak. And when it comes to Daniel Bryan, you're talking about an extremely, extremely controversial when it comes to these head trauma injuries and the NFL and wrestling and MMA and lawsuit settlements. And everybody's walking on eggshells on this one when it comes to what people are finding out with modern science about head trauma. And so I understand that he's been, Daniel Bryan has had other independent doctors sign off, but until your doctor, your WWE doctor, the one you hired, until they sign off and say that they're, you know, positive that there's not going to be any issues, you can't take the chance. What happens if, God forbid, something happens? He has a family now. Now, do I think he's going to wrestle again? Yeah, I think he's, as soon as his contract is up, he's going to go to New Japan, go to Ring of Honor, go to wherever. I think that he wants to wrestle, and he feels like he's healthy enough to wrestle, and that's a personal decision. And then it's up to the each individual wrestling promotion to decide if they're comfortable with what might happen if they put him on their cards. As far as Kurt Angle wrestling at the pay-per-view, I am pretty darn sure that even though they were in an impossible situation, that he must have gotten signed off on a physical that he is okay to work a match. And Kurt's injuries are more just his body's beat up. And his neck, you know, he broke his neck, obviously, in the Olympics, but it not so much concussion. So you could work around beat up body and neck issues if you're putting a match together. You can't work around the fact that, you know, somebody may take a bump the wrong way. Somebody might hit you the wrong way. Somebody might slap you the wrong way. I've seen people that got concussions just from getting slapped hard. You can't mess around with that.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.